ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for Fight Night Picks with your host, Frank
and Matt
Allen.
And welcome back with Fight Night Picks. UFC 275 coming up this weekend, and a big time card with two all-timer title fights up at the top. Teixeira taking on Prohashka, and also Valentina Shevchenko and Tyler Santos. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. And a lot of you have lately. You can find the man to my left, to your right, Matt Allen, on the respective socials at Matt Allen FNP. Now, Matt, I'm amped the F up about the card coming up this weekend. 12 total fights, some South Asian flair on this card happening in Singapore. This is just the fifth UFC card from Singapore. And listen, not a large area, but a big time opportunity for not just the fighters, but encroaching on one championships territory over there in Singapore. But again, I know that we have a lot of fights to break down. Five ranked fighters on this card, plus the two champions, one UFC debut. And also, and I know a lot of fans are going to be talking about this, but I haven't seen too much buzz about it. UFC Road to the UFC Singapore is going to be taking place, with the tournament starting this week. And you have some fighters looking to punch their ticket into the promotion. The last time the UFC did a tournament like this, they had UFC Road to Japan. Mizuto Haroda and Teruto Ishihara were able to get contracts out of that. So exciting times to be a UFC fan, especially for those fans in Southeast Asia. Matt, I know you're amped up, as am I, about this card.
I can't stress just how excited I am for these top two title fights. Because here's the thing. We see this in a lot of different sports. Remember when Kobe Bryant was supposed to play against LeBron James in the 2009 finals? It was almost going to be like a changing of the guard. Like, if LeBron could beat Kobe, it was finally LeBron's time and it was his league. Now, unfortunately and surprisingly, Dwight Howard put an end to that. And he ended up going to the finals. But this title fight does feel like it could be one of those changing of the guards. Jiří Prochazka is sort of the new hotness in town. And with Glover Teixeira almost like rewriting the book on longevity in MMA, being a champion at 42 years of age, this is a very, very big title fight. And for the co-main event too, it's not often that we can look at a fight with Valentina Shevchenko and think, hey, this is going to be competitive, this is going to go long. But I gotta be honest, It has not been, since Jessica Andrade fought Valentina that I've really thought that a contender has had a chance against her. But I really do think Tyler Santos, with her size, with her volume, with her really advanced striking, is going to offer an interesting puzzle for Valentina. I'm not going to sit here and make some crazy hot take early that Tyler's going to win by knockout or anything, but I really do think this is going to be a competitive co-main event for the flyweight title.
And the odds respect Tyler Santos as a challenger, 19-1. She's been beating fighters at their own games here recently, so a lot of fun there. We're going to throw it on over to our fight night picks, fight of the night screen, because again, there's 12 total fights. We picked two. Let us know down below in the comment section whether you agree or not, but who you have in a possible fight of the night, because I think we got a couple of barn burners on our hands.
Let us know down below in the comment section who you've got. It's time for the fight of the night with Fight Night Picks.
So I gotta say this, for me, this is head and shoulders the biggest fight on this card. I mean, apart from the two title fights, of course, but Rogério Bontorin's taking on my guy, Manel Kopp. And for I'm a star boy, Manel Kopp, his last two performances showed you why he was not only the Ryzen bantamweight champ, but why he was so exciting coming into the UFC. He had a couple of stumbling blocks out of the gate against Alessandre Pantoja, Mateusz Nicolau, and he had a good
case may have heard of them
to say that he beat Nicolau. But if you do look at it for Kopp, he's riding a wave of success. Bontorin lost his last fight by split decision. Again, you can make an argument either way, but these two guys, when they're on, are kill or be killed fighters. And if you want to look at a Bontorin fight that he didn't necessarily win, look at his fight against Kai Kara France, and then insert Manel Kopp into a fight like that. How could it not be exciting?
The great thing about Manel Kopp is that, yes, he did have very high expectations upon entry to the UFC. You mentioned his level of competition when he did come over. Pantoja and Nicolau, two of the top fighters in this division, but he didn't make a fairly good account of himself. But the good thing about Manel Kopp at this point of his career is he's had a little bit more time, so we have a more realistic expectation of what kind of a fighter he's going to be from here on out, and he has looked like his former self as of late, and this fight against Bonturin should be a phenomenal one, because win, lose, or draw, Rogerio Bonturin is one of those fighters who's going to make the fight extremely tough on you. He can grapple, he can strike, he has a fairly good chin, and he's not afraid to get into a firefight, especially with his background in grappling, so he's not worried about the takedown either. I think this fight, no matter where it does take place, is going to be a phenomenal one.
And when you look at our second pick, 2020 fight of the year, Tapology has this as the 7th greatest fight of all time, and that was for a belt. How wild is that? Because the last strawweight title fight was terrible. But if you do look at this one, Zhang Weili, Ioana Jędrzejczyk, Zhang Weili, couple of losses since that fight, both of them to Rose Namajunas, her last time out, a controversial split decision loss. And for Ioana Jędrzejczyk, she's been at the beach, she's been training, she's been getting Karolina Kowalkiewicz to championship level, training together at American Top Team. But realistically, I look at this fight as the first fight was great. Sometimes when they have rematches, you anticipate it a little bit too much and it doesn't necessarily deliver, but I am really looking forward to this one.
There's a part of me that's almost happy that this fight is 3 rounds and not 5 rounds, because these two women took an ungodly amount of damage the first time that they fought, and I think we sort of realized that if they do go another 5 rounds, it probably will be a similar fight to their first one, and at 3 rounds, hopefully they can pace themselves a little bit more, and we will just get a wild 15-minute fight. And the great thing about this fight, too, is I don't really care at what stage either one of these fighters are at in their overall career. I just think their styles are going to make for an entertaining fight. Again, win, lose, or draw with Ioana Jędrzejczyk, when she was champion, she was arguably the most entertaining fighter in the UFC in her prime, and I don't think that's an exaggeration whatsoever. And with Weili, she did represent at one point sort of a changing of the guard in this division. I think this is as good of a non-title fight that the UFC could make really in any division, and yes, that is largely based around the fact that their first fight is one of the greatest fights of all time.
Winner gets champion Carla Esparza. Ooh. That sounds like something you would have said in 2013, but we're saying it years later. So let us know down below, like I said, in that comment section, who you have as a possible fight of the night, because there are some big time choices on this card. Joshua Kulibao, Sungwoo Choi. Ooh. Let's get into it. Some big time fights. So I'm really looking forward to it. So coming up this weekend, there's a lot of fights that I can get really excited about. And again, a good opportunity for a showcase of a lot of fighters that are either out of Southeast Asia, Australia, as well. Jacob Malkoon, Josh Kulibao, out of those regions. We have the UFC debut of 6-1 Chinese phenom. And is it Heiser Mahashata, or do we just go Mahashata? It seems like we're going with the mononym. We're just going Mahashata. He's going to be taking on Steve Garcia, Jake Matthews, and again, you want to talk about a buzzsaw, Andrea Fialho making that fourth fight out in 2022. Bakari Dana on short notice taking on my guy, Mr. Perfect, Kyung Ho Gong, a guy fight that I love to watch. And then, of course, you have Jocelyn Edwards, Ramona Pascual, and Silvana Gomez-Wada is taking on Liang Na on this card. But Matt, I know there's a lot of moving pieces. I've talked about a lot of fights. I have a lot to say about these fights, but what's one that you're looking at that's maybe under the radar coming out this week?
I think Brendan Allen versus Jacob Malkoon is an interesting fight, because it is a huge step up in competition for Jacob Malkoon, and I've had a really hard time gauging where he belongs in the division, because I thought Al Hassan was going to destroy him, and that wasn't the case whatsoever. He looked really good in that fight. So for Malkoon, it feels like he is still trying to shed that I'm more than just Robert Whittaker's training partner moniker, so I do think him against Brendan Allen should be an interesting fight, because for Allen, I know I had high hopes for him. Like, I don't think I'm the only one either. He was one of those, like, borderline top 15 guys. But it does feel like every time he does have sort of a step up in competition, and he's not this massive favorite, he does tend to stumble. He is a very hittable fighter. So I do think Malkoon versus Brendan Allen should be a fun fight.
And listen, it was supposed to be a Robert Whittaker card. So then, of course, it's a Jacob Malkoon card. But Whittaker and Vettori are moved on to a later date. So of note this week, I'm away for most of the week. There's no question mark kicks. I think what we'll do, we'll just post our final picks if anything changes around weigh-in. So again, at Craig Allen FNP, at Matt Allen FNP, at Fight Night Picks. Very easy. Twitter, Instagram, so on and so forth. No sidekick for that main card. I'm going to be traversing the Canada.
Wow.
Traversing the Canada. So a big time card, and it should be a lot of fun. Make sure if you're not subscribed, toss that sub button and toss a like. It would certainly be appreciated. Matt, we have a lot to talk about coming up this week. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, bantamweights are set to meet in the center of the cage, and as Steve Mazzagatti used to say, hook 'em up! We've got a big-time fight between Panama's own Jocelyn Edwards. That's a callback to Pride 33 in Vegas, and she's taking on...
Do you think Mazzagatti's out there watching? If you are, Steve, we're big fans.
Well, he's cage-side in Vegas every single weekend, just wearing the referee jersey. Now, to get back to script, we have Jocelyn Edwards representing Panama, taking on Hong Kong's own Ramona Pascual, former UFC Shanghai PI fighter, I guess I could say. And for Pascual, listen, I could tell you about the fact that she was on the Hong Kong national rugby team, which is pretty damn cool because they're big into rugby sevens. They're one of those host stops. Things get a little bit crazy. When I was sick last weekend before the videos, I sat down and watched rugby sevens all damn day. Wow. I love sevens. It's fast action. Ramona Pascual coming from that ilk. But if you do look at it for Pascual, a lot of experience with a lot of different promotions. She just made her North American debut not that long ago over with Icon FC, that all of a sudden now belongs to Jorge Masvidal, and Bo Nickel's just knocking fools dead over there. When we're talking about Ramona Pascual, gets the win with Icon FC, gets a win with Invicta, that one on short notice against Shamir Peshewa up at 150 pounds. Then she comes into the UFC again on short notice, representing, again, an interesting gym in Syndicate MMA. That's been the gym for the last couple of camps, and taking on Josiane Nunes. And when you go and you watch that fight, again, she's replacing Wu Yanan on short notice, so you get a bit of a mixed bag. The move was ultimately to be at 135, where she's at this weekend, but the fight against Nunes up at 145, and I mean, in that fight, she had some success with her kicks. She brawled a little bit, and that got her caught, and she had some success with the best tool of her game. It's that clinch with those knees up the middle. It finished Peshewa in that fight over with Invicta, but against Nunes, she was trying to work away at that gas tank. Turns out that small Brazilian lady has gas for days and no brakes, and knocked down poor old Ramona Pascual a couple of times. So looking to pick up the pieces, taking on Panama's own former boxing national fighter, Jocelyn Edwards. Oh, by the way, Jocelyn Edwards, what's her takedown defense like?
Not very good.
So she was able to beat Wu Yanan, though she got taken down once in that fight. But Matt, when I went back and I did my tape study and when I wrote down my notes, I had to give this to the credit of Jessica Rose Clark. You can call her Jessica, you can call her Rose, you can call her Clark. And a tricky loss to Carol Hossa. Hossa and Clark went 10 of 19 in their takedown attempts in that. And out of those two fights, both fighters are able to get over 11 minutes of control time in each respective fight. Not good for Edwards.
And that's something we talk about a lot. How some fighters have maybe poor defensive grappling. Some fighters have poor takedown defense. Some fighters have a really good initial takedown defense. They have that good first move off their back. And then other fighters just have plain terrible defensive grappling, no matter how you cut it. And I would say Jocelyn Edwards would fall into that category. But this fight, more than anything, comes down to Ramona Pascual's ability to cut off the cage in the fight. Because Jocelyn Edwards is someone who, if we are being honest, probably moves a little bit too much for her own good. She's not a fighter who will really sit down on her shots and try to knock her opponent out. She'll really be moving her feet a lot of pitter-patter. It's not necessarily to the level of like a Caitlin Shukagian, but they are cut from the same cloth to a certain degree. And with Pascual's ability to get this fight into the clinch, it will be interesting to see. Will she go for trip takedowns? Will she try to get close and then go for a takedown? Or is she just going to be happy to try to get strikes off on the feet? Because if she does keep it on the feet, yes, she might land a knee here or there. But she's also going to give Jocelyn Edwards the opportunity to break the clinch, land some of her own elbows, and keep the fight standing on the feet. Because I do think on the feet, Jocelyn Edwards is going to have a decided advantage in the amount of volume she's able to throw off the back foot. Again, it's not the most damaging of strikes. I kind of throw it in that Maria Moroz category where it's like, I guess, you know, like, damage is the first thing that matters in MMA at all times. That's why, like, if you score a knockdown in a round, you've got to get your ass beat for the next 4 minutes if you're not going to end up winning that round. That's why it scores so highly in the minds of judges. So for Ramona Pascual, there is going to be an opportunity. Get the fight to the fence, land a couple good knees to the body. Maybe that gets Jocelyn Edwards down to one knee, and then Pascual should be able to be the heavier fighter on top and really be able to implement some of her grappling from there. I just don't believe in her ability to cut the cage Paige off, and I do think it's going to be that much of an important X factor in this fight, because if she just follows Jocelyn Edwards over and over and over again, I do think Edwards is a skilled enough striker to be able to strike off the back foot and just put up good numbers. Again, I'm not saying it's going to be the most damaging stuff. I don't think Ramona Pascual is going to have a face like Ioana at the end of her first fight with Wei Li, but I do think it's going to be enough volume to get the judges to give her the win.
Like, I have a hard time with this fight because, again, for Jocelyn Edwards, I know she had the loss coming into the UFC a few fights ago over with LFA for the title against Sarah Alper, split decision loss. All Alper does is tend to pressure fighters and wrestle, and she's kind of built a little bit like Ramona Pascual, so there is that. And then you have Edwards going out and fighting, like, lesser talent. She beats Pamela Gonzalez over with UWC, and I know we even showed a clip from that fight in her original debut where Edwards goes out there and just beats the brakes off
poor
Pamela.
She was Bangkok ready.
Throws the kick to the body, slumps her in near the corner, beats Wu Yanan with a little bit of that volume, a little bit of that pitter-patter. But again, I can't stress enough, if I was in the ear of Jocelyn Edwards, I would be thinking, okay, you want to go to Extreme Couture, you want to go to American Top Team, we want to train with those top women who are going to test your wrestling. And for Jocelyn Edwards, she had a little bit of a time where she was training in Iowa. I know we mentioned that a long time ago, but it's been Kings MMA for the last couple of camps, except for the fact that if you go to her Instagram, and now I'm going to tip my hand, Antonina Shevchenko's Instagram or Valentina's, Jocelyn Edwards has been a part of that camp for Valentina Shevchenko, hanging out with Pavel. I don't know what that's like, but really just traveling the world and
training
with him.
I'd love to pick Pavel's brain. He'd be an interesting fellow to talk to.
I'm sure he's real quiet and he likes to sip tea, so that's Pavel's
vibe. He's probably described as a good listener, I'd imagine.
Well, Pavel. But for Jocelyn Edwards, my point of all of this is, you're working your striking all the damn time. If she worked her defensive wrestling any, she could be a ranked fighter in this women's bantamweight division. I just don't know what the ceiling is. And for Ramona Pascual, I get it. She's 33. She started in MMA around 27. And she's had long career layoffs due to injuries in the past. I mean, knee injuries and so on and so forth. So long layoffs.
Do you look at the mirror and think, hey, there's still a chance?
There might be. I mean, listen, I played rugby sevens at one point. So did Ramona Pascual.
Wow.
Now, what I didn't do was head off TEDx talks, and for Ramona Pascual, the title is Why Fear is Our Greatest Asset in Unlocking Human Potential.
Wow.
So, interesting there from her. And if you do look at Pascual, and I want to make sure I hammer this one home for everybody out there, the weights throughout her career, she has one fight at 150, four fights at 145, one fight at a catchweight at 141, one at a catchweight at 137, and two fights at 135. So I don't necessarily worry about the weight, though she has kind of fluctuated through it. She also cornered Liang Na in Liang Na's first UFC fight because Liang Na couldn't have her corners there in the States. So that should be interesting, Matt. I look at the odds for this one. Edwards open a minus 180 favorite. Still about there, minus 172 on best fight odds. For Pascual, open to plus 155. Now plus 142. So the underdog is the fighter out of Hong Kong. We have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise to us, they are to you. Matt, Edwards is a favorite, but I'm going to say over-under 67.5% Edwards.
I'll say under, but she'll be the favorite.
Slightly over, 743 total votes, 71% Edwards, 90% by decision for the 29% that have Pascual, 82% by decision. Matt, who do we have in this fight?
I'm really glad you brought up the fact that Edwards has been training with the Shevchenko sisters, because I also had that weird deep dive where I'm like, hey, I know who that lady is, and then you figure out, hey, Jocelyn Edwards has been training with one of the best fighters of our generation. And that's something we talk about a lot when a fighter fights another great fighter. Maybe it's a big step up in competition. They don't win the fight necessarily, but they'll have a great fight with someone who is considered out of their league, and they sort of get the rub. Like, Stipe talked about that when he fought JDS the first time, and that's always the example I think of. I do think when you train with another great fighter who does help you, I do think you can also get a similar rub from them and maybe sort of realize your maximum potential. And I do like Jocelyn Edwards with that regard. Here is going to be the X factor, though. Ramona Pascual, being the bigger fighter in this fight, is going to have just advantages in all the areas we already assume she would have advantages. If she is able to get on top, well, I thought she'd have success in that position anyway, so her being a little bit bigger, I don't really see as being that big of an asset if she's not able to get the fight there in the first place. It's almost like if you have a fighter who has great Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but no wrestling whatsoever. It's like, okay, You know, we don't really have to worry about it that much. I can dictate where the fight takes place, and if I just avoid the ground, it's not a big deal. With Ramona Pascual, I think if you can avoid getting under her on the ground, you being Jocelyn Edwards, then I do think she'll have great success in this fight. So I do expect her to stay on her bike, strike with volume, and she should be able to get the win.
And to add to your point, people can see out there on our graphic, Pascual should be the shorter fighter, should have less in terms of reach. Edwards is a very tall and skinny fighter, but Ramona Pascual, built different, really. Yeah. Like, when you do look at this overall fight. So I think this one's going to be very, very close. If Pascual ends up on top having success in the first round, I might look at a live opportunity between round one and round two, because Edwards has been proven that once she gets taken down, you can rinse and repeat. And even if you could force her up against the cage and keep her in the clinch, she has a hard time getting out of that. Plum clinch and the movements and the jerks, so to speak, out of Pascual. Big opportunity in her game. She really attacks the gas tank with those kicks to the body and with the knees. I know I'm sounding like I'm going with Pascual. I like the volume game out of Jocelyn Edwards on the outside. And I'm not in the camp of the champ camp. Like, I look at Rafa Garcia. He's been in Justin Gaethje's camp forever. And it took him until now to beat Jesse Ronson impressively for me to go, wow, finally, those big advancements out of Rafa Garcia. But when you look at it in terms of Edwards striking, I think iron sharpens iron in that respect. So in this one, both of us going with Panama's Jocelyn Edwards. You let us know down below in the comments section who you have in a tricky fight. We get some big time ones coming up on the rest of this card, including two big title fights up at the top that you're not going to want to miss. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, and as we always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, a clash of styles at 115 pounds. We have the Dragon Girl, but I think on ESPN, she's graduated to Dragon Woman, Liang Na, taking on La Malvada, Savannah Gomez Juarez. Matt, when you look at this fight, for Liang Na, it is long wrestling attempts across the cage or body lock trip takedowns. It's a lot of fun. She is very much submission over position, which is something I don't say very often, especially with much reverence. And she's taking on a very slick striker out of Argentina in Savannah Gomez Juarez. Now, Matt, when I do look at this fight, this is what the fans need to go home and kind of just sit there and simmer with. Like, if you're sitting there, like, hanging out at a hookah bar, or you're going to Buffalo
like
Wild Wings,
Luka Doncic,
and you're talking to your buddies, this is the thing that you're going to tell them. You're going to go, okay, so it's a low-level fight at strawweight, and neither one of these women have a win in the UFC, but their last wins were over a year ago. And what was the level of competition like, Craig? That's your question. I know it is, so I'm going to answer that one. Okay, so for Savannah Gomez Juarez, her last win was a second-round TKO win over 4-6 Gisele Pereira.
Yikes.
Okay, so Liang Na was 19-4 at the time. Her last win was over debuting Mengnan Liu by first round armbar. Matt, little bit of a laugh there from Craig Allen. Not the greatest level of competition coming into the UFC. Now, I should say, Savannah Gomez Juarez had a fight against Ariane Lipsky for the title over with KSW. And for Liang Na, I go down through and I look at some of the names. She had fights against Maria Agapova, Juliana Velasquez with Bellator, so the former champ over there, because Liz Carmouche is now the champ. And also a fight against Lilia Shakarova. Ugh, you saw it came a knocking with Lilia.
Yeah.
And wins against Liana Jojua for Liang Na and Julia Beriskova, who actually fought Joanna Jędrzejczyk back in the day. So, some good wins for Liang Na. The big names that I brought up, those were losses. And for Savannah Gomez Juarez, a fight against Vanessa Mello, a dub, and a loss to, again, Ariane Lipsky, the Queen of Violence, when she was the Queen of Violence
yeah,
over with KSW.
Yeah, there was a short time.
But again, I can only say so much about this fight, because for Liang Na, UFC debut, looked amazing at the start against Ariane Carnelosi. Dropped her with the first right hand that she threw. They don't consider it a knockdown on UFC stats, but she dropped
her. Knockdown.
And then after that, had success with the grappling until at the end of the first round, she almost got knocked out. Then her corner had to pick her up off the mat and walk her to her stool. And then when she got back up, she ended up getting finished in the second round. Gomez Juarez loses her debut. And then she went out there and dropped Vanessa Demopoulos and then went into her guard game and got submitted. So, bad fight IQ there.
If he gets stopped by Vanessa Demopoulos in the UFC, it's just not a great look. This is a weird fight because this is like Moneyball, you know? Like, Moneyball is the theory that you can take somebody who makes no money at all, basically, and they're going to play at like 95% of what somebody who would make millions of dollars would play. So you're basically going to get the exact same output from that player, but you end up spending much less money.
Who's the David Justice in all of this?
Old Man Justice was a monster back in the day. Yankees legend. Gomez Juarez, I guess, because they're like the exact same age. But for Gomez Juarez, that's the problem. That's something we talked about a lot as of late. It's, hey, you're getting a lot of prospects. They're 30. Maybe don't expect a lot. I know UFC pay structure is a very hot topic nowadays. But I do think people realize that when you do get fighters of Liang Na and Silvana Gomez Juarez's caliber, they don't give them the bag. Folks, they just don't. So they can fill cards with fights like these, and I'm not trying to undersell this fight by any means. I just don't want anybody to come into this, A, betting any money because it's too low level, don't do it, it's just not a good idea, and don't have the craziest of expectations, because it's going to be one way or the other. Liang Na is someone who, like you said, she tries to wrestle from very, very far outside. She's not someone who really likes to strike her way into the clinch, but what I will give her credit for is, when she does throw punches, she does put quite a bit behind them. She is almost from that, like, Tony Gravely, you know, category. Now, Gravely looked great his last time out, last night, of course, and I don't think Liang Na has that type of power, but when she does decide to sit down on her shots, like you mentioned, she had a knockdown in her last fight. She can look good in spots, but the problem is, she does get exposed if she's on her feet for long periods of time, and against someone like Gomez Juarez, who has decent punching power, and the thing about saying that is, she does have decent punching power, but like you said, against who? If you're beating a bunch of people whose records are sort of in the negative or in the one and ones, I do call into question some of your finishing ability. But I will say this, the fact that she does have a number of finish wins on the feet does speak to the fact that I do think she will have a decided edge in the stand-up during this fight. But I don't know, like, what do you think this fight's going to look like in the third round? Because I don't expect either fighter to have great cardio. I think whoever wins the first round really is probably going to be able to bank these next two rounds. Because I think the first round, it might be decisive. And then round two and three, I don't really know if either fighter's going to be able to do much to separate themselves from their opponent.
I don't think we're going to get there. And I don't say that at women's strawweight, but I think fight to not go the distance or doesn't go the distance, I think that might be the way. But again, I wouldn't touch this fight because, again, Liang Na has two wins by disqualification, so how often do you see that? It's in our graphics, but again, one of them, it was in her five on in, she gets hit in the back of the head, so listen, fighter wins. How often do we see punches in the back of the head? We saw them last weekend, nothing happened. We saw fence grab, nothing happened. And again,
we saw toes in the cage, though, and something did happen.
For Silvana Gomez Juarez, training out of Entram Gym, working out the striking with some of the best in the biz, like Johnny Munoz Jr., who got knocked out by Tony Gravely last weekend. No, it should be an interesting fight nonetheless. Again, but it is boxing from Gomez Juarez. From Liang Na, long-range attacks in the striking, but no head movement or defense.
It's very much on a straight line.
And again, long-time takedowns, but if she can't get them, I wouldn't be surprised if she almost just tries to play guard like Damien Maia in 2010. Like, I really wouldn't be surprised from that. So I look at the odds in this one. Gomez Juarez, open minus 150 favorite, minus 164 right now. Liang Na, open plus 130, plus 135. Matt, we have a look at the topology votes. Surprise to us, they are to you. I'm going to say over-under. I guess if Gomez Juarez is favored, I'll say 60% over-under Gomez Juarez.
I'll say under, I guess.
You're going to say under. It is,
wow,
763 total votes, 73% Liang Na, 33% by decision, 61% by submission. For the 27% that have Juarez, 58% by decision, 24% by knockout. I'm going to level with the Fight Night Picks fans out here because they've been around, they're having fun, and you paid attention to a Silvana Gomez Juarez Liang Na prediction video. So thank you. I appreciate
your
time.
Who thought we'd be here?
Look at us. But when the topology votes like that around not popular fighters are so skewed one way, which is the opposite of the odds, I find it fun. Matt, I'm going to make my prediction right now. I had Liang Na. I have Liang Na. I'm taking Liang Na to win this fight because if Gomez Juarez drops her, yeah, I saw the poster that Liang Na was on at the end of the first round of her last fight. The second round where she's just getting hit a little bit but holding her hands up and the referee's like, no mas. I still like Liang Na for her takedown attempts. Gomez Juarez, out of her two fights in the UFC, her takedown defense was porous against Lupita Godinez and against Vanessa Demopoulos. She showed no awareness on the ground in that one.
No, none whatsoever. But this is going to be a one-way traffic kind of fight, no matter who wins.
Yes.
Either Gomez Juarez is able to manage to keep this fight on the feet, she's able to box Liang Na's ears in, or Liang Na is able to get on the inside, get on top, rinse and repeat like you said, because Gomez Juarez does not have much by way of defensive grappling, be it with her takedown defense or with her ability to get back up to the feet. It's a lot of close guard, try to stall, hopefully the ref saves me and get me back up to my feet. And honestly, the more I watch MMA, it does feel like refs are less likely to stand fighters up. But I gotta be honest, I do like that. I'm a big believer in you gotta fight out of that position. The offensive fighter got you there on purpose. Now it is your job to get back up to your feet if you don't want to be there. I'm not a huge fan of fighters who just choose to hold on and look for the ref to save them. But I also agree with you. I do think Liang Na has more longevity with her type of a game plan. I do think if she is able to get that early takedown in the first round, it will help her get success later on in this fight.
Liang Na, very poor top pressure. I do have to say that. She's a neon belly type. She's always going submission over position, like I mentioned at the start. But both of us going with the dragon girl, dragon woman, whatever it might be, Liang Na to get the win this weekend. Let us know down below in the comments section if you have Argentina's La Malvada, Savannah Gomez Juarez, or if you're going with Liang Na. We have some big time fights left on this card, including a top billing 2020 former fight of the year between Zhang Weili and Yuan Jacek up near the top. Two title fights on top of that one that you're not going to want to miss. Keep it locked in with Fightin' Apex. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, another clash of styles. We have my guy, Kyung Ho Gong, taking on Dana Storm Bakery. And this is an interesting fight because for Dana, he's coming in on short notice. He is replacing Simon Oliveira in this fight. And I'm going to start the video off this way because, listen, snake oil or not, people are going to sell you a lot of different things on this fight from either fighter, and rightfully so. But I have to say this, and I can't stress it enough. Bakary Dana got knocked out a month and a half ago by Chris Gutierrez, and he's taking this fight on short notice. He's been over training at Tiger Muay Thai for the last month, which is interesting because he's a longtime Jackson Wink guy, but getting acclimatized to the climate, I guess, so to speak, in Thailand, getting ready to fight in Singapore. But I do look at it for Bakary Dana, and I go back and look at his last fight. He was riding a wave of success. Now, he was a slight favorite against Chris Gutierrez, and he was fighting that fight like a guy who knocked out his last two opponents very, very quickly. And if I even go back to the third to last fight, he knocked out Guido Canetti very quickly too. So three big time knockouts, you turn into Tony Gravely at 135, and you're knocking fools dead, and you fall in love with your hands. But the trouble for Bakary Dana in his last fight, he was reaching for every punch and he was throwing every ounce of his body into every shot against Chris Gutierrez. Gutierrez in the second round went, okay, I've been moving around way too much so far. I'm just going to move like Merab Dvalishvili just once. Just one time spinning back fist. We'll see what happens. Knocked him down to the ground and then he turned into Brock Lesnar and hammer fisted him out of existence. Pettis. So again, I'm very surprised that anybody's letting Bakary Dana get back into a fight this soon because it was March 26th when he got knocked out and he's fighting in early June. I find that very surprising.
It is very surprising because normally, okay, think about it this way. If somebody gets knocked out, you normally say, hey, don't take any hits to the head for at least 2 months or a month. Then you get back into the gym. Then we'll talk about a training
And this
camp.
Motherfucker went, I want a hard spar Tiger fucking Muay Thai and fight Kyung Ho Gong, who's knocked guys down multiple times in the UFC.
Not like Tiger Muay Thai is known for their hard training sessions or anything.
No,
they are. They basically fight like four times a week, and it's very intense. So I am a little concerned about what version of Bakary Dana we do get in this fight, because I will say this. I do think the best version of Bakary is probably better than the best version of Kyung Ho Kong that we've seen in the UFC up until this point, because he does have exceptional punching power with his hands. He's not somebody who throws really enough kicks, for being honest, and I do think that speaks to what you were saying before, how he does sometimes have to reach for his punches because he doesn't really have any range finder other than his jab, and he's not really a jab heavy fighter either. He's gonna jump in with a left hook, try to follow it up with a right hook. He's really looking for his power shots more than anything to accumulate some kind of damage on the outside. But the thing about Dana is, when it looks good, it looks great. And I do think that if he can get off to early success against Kyung Ho Kong, he could just continue to build. It's sort of that downhill like Giannis in transition. There's not much you can do once he gets that first step, because once Bakary does get your timing, he is able to land those power shots, and he is one of the more heavy-handed bantamweights out there. But I am really worried. Like, what kind of a training camp do you get in only, what, 5 weeks, basically? Especially coming off a very severe knockout. And there's different kinds of knockouts. There's, like, Jairzinho Rosen's strike last weekend, where it's like, okay, the stoppage was fine if you want to, but it's not like he was out cold or anything. You're not really worried about him long term.
And neither was Bacari. Like, he got right back up.
Exactly, but it was still, like, worrying, and I do worry about him taking this fight on such short notice. But the thing about Kyung Ho Kong is, he will strike enough, but I do expect him to look for more of a grappling-heavy approach in this fight, because if he does find himself in one of those, hey, strike-for-strike kind of fights, I don't care if Bakary got knocked out last week, or even if he did get knocked out last week, I would still favor him in that kind of a fight, because I do think he is much more heavy-handed than Mr. Perfect, but I do think Kyung Ho Kong is the much more well-rounded fighter, and if he is able to strike his way into the clinch effectively, I do think that there will be opportunities for him to go for takedowns, but I think the first 4 minutes, first 5 minutes, even bleeding into the second round a little bit, is going to be really dangerous for Kyung Ho Kong because he himself is hittable on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, for Kyung Ho Kong, you talk about it like he's definitely more of a long-range weapon type of guy. And again, this is one of those fights where he's a little bit taller, he has a little bit more in terms of reach. Some fighters don't use it. We talk about it here all the time. Some guys are long and lanky, but they try to work in boxing range and then they end up losing. Look at James Vick at the end of his career. That's kind of what amounted to his downfall. But for Kong, he does understand it. Now, I look at some of his fights. The fight against Tsuruto Ishihara, he gets dropped early, but then he drops Tsuruto and he ends up getting the finish. Brandon Davis drops him. The fight against Rani Yaya, beats the brakes off him in the first round, drops him, and then in the second round, he gets controlled for 4 minutes and 48 seconds. In the third round, he gets controlled for 4 minutes and 24 seconds because Rani Yaya is just like a renaissance man at 135. Like, I absolutely love to watch him work, but he was able to beat Kyung Ho Kong at the game where Young is definitely more than competent on the ground. I mean, both these guys have fought Guido Kennedy. One guy knocked him out, and one guy just turned into a, well, used Guido's nickname against him, turned into a ninja to Kyung Ho Kong in that fight. He went sicko mode. But I do look at this fight as Gong's last fight out. He lost. He got just absolutely worn down in the second and the third rounds. I'm eager to see what he looks like in this one because, again, you see him in the picture here with the long hair. He had even longer hair on his Instagram.
He did. Looking like me.
But then he cut it right back up. So Kyung Ho Kong, Mr. Perfect. It's going to be really interesting to see what we get. The odds in this fight at open, Kong at a plus 130. Bakary Danat, minus 150. We have a look at the topology vote. Surprise to us there to you. I'm going to say over under Matt, 70% Bakary Danat.
I think it'll be over.
You think it's going to be over? It is over. 734 total votes. 77 Dana, 72% by knockout. For the 23% that have Kyung Ho Kong, 70% by decision. I think Kyung Ho Kong beats Bakary Dana coming up this weekend. And it's the short notice nature. It's the fact that Bakary Dana got finished not that long ago. And it's the fact that Bakary Dana, again, I've seen people out there on the Underground Whisper Network talking about this fight saying, well, Kyung Ho Kong, only a one-round guy. Well, his last fight out, yeah, he got taken down over and over, second round, third round. Old man Yaya's got a high motor that keeps it going, and he's a totally different fighter than Bakary Dana. I think Gong is better on the ground, better with his wrestling, long-range weapons, as long as he doesn't get caught, and that's a tough ask. But I do think he gets a win coming up this weekend over Dana, which is very unpopular because a lot of people love the man out of Mongolia.
And I completely understand it. If it wasn't for the short notice nature of this fight, I would favor Dana Bakary in this fight, without a doubt, to be honest. I think he's the much better striker. Even though Kong can strike from the outside, I don't think it's a sustainable enough game plan for him to be able to stay away from the power punching of Bakary for 15 minutes. And I would expect Dana to get on the inside at some point, land some power shots, and potentially even put him down during the fight. But I do agree with you. The fact that Bakary got knocked out not that long ago, and the fact that Khan is the more well-rounded fighter, if he's not having success on the feet, he's going to be able to be the one to decide, hey, I can take it to the mat. But the weird thing about Kong is, we talk about this sometimes, how there's some fighters who are really good with offensive leg kicks, but they don't really check them defensively. Kong's like that with his own grappling. He is a good offensive grappler, but sometimes he can get behind if he is fighting another fighter who is very grappling heavy. So I will be interested to see if he does have a lot of success in the first round. Does he burn himself out a little bit too much so that Dana Bakary can get his way back in as the fight goes on? I'm going to go with Mr. Perfect, but this should be a fun fight.
Both of us going with the underdog out of Busan. Mr. Perfect, Kyung Ho Kong, Matt. I can hear the boo birds out there. They're on the airplanes. They're in their own cars listening to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. They're giving us the gears, but we're going with Mr. Perfect. Let us know down below in the comments section who you have in this matchup. We got a lot bigger and better fights coming up, including the two title fights up near the top. So you're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. And as we always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, the Andrea Fialho Show rolls on and touches down in Singapore, so be sure to get ready if you're a fan. Bring some popcorn. I'm sure they're going to be selling Andrea Fialho trinkets there, maybe. I mean, what are trinkets in 2022? Like,
what would be
NFTs?
A Portugal trinket?
NFTs? Are they still a thing anymore?
I don't think they're doing great.
Well, we'll see how it goes, because for Fialho, this is his fourth fight with the UFC since he debuted in January. Lost to Michelle Pereira on the main card of UFC 270. He was able to go out there and pick up two quick first-round knockout wins his last two times out. But coming from his last fight against Cameron Van Camp, which I cannot stress this enough, the fight against Van Camp was 3 weeks ago. His fight against Miguel Baez was a month and a week ago. Now he's taking on Jake Matthews, a guy who's forever on the periphery of the top 15 in the UFC, whose last loss of his own right came to number 9 ranked Sean Brady, where he got completely out-wrestled and grappled in that fight and submitted in the third round. But for Matthews, this is a guy, like, I can't say enough good things about him. 10-5 is overall UFC record since he debuted in 2014 as a 19-year-old. And you look at the guys that Jake Matthews has lost to, and like Andrew Holbrook's the only one where you go, Andrew Holbrook by split decision, but all the other names, James Bick, when James Bick was the hotness. Who else, Matt? Well, he beat Diego Sanchez.
Beat him
quite badly. His last loss before Brady was against Anthony Rocco Martin. Remember him?
Got rocked and submitted. That was a bad one.
It's Rocco now. But I look at the Jake Matthews wins, and I can point to some big ones, like when he fought Rostam Akman and beat him quite soundly, 59-15, the total significant strikes there. Or against Diego Sanchez, three judges scoring at 30-26 for Matthews. But he's never been able to make it over that hump against the big names. And this is a big opportunity for Jake Matthews, but also for Fialho, because it's the opportunity to beat a guy to then get another top 15 guy. Again, Pereira, somewhere around there, big name, main card of a pay-per-view is last time. But Matthews gets you that Muslim Salikov, that name down there from 15 to 10, I think.
Alessio Zaleski would be the ideal next opponent for Andre Fialho if he is able to get this win. But Jake Matthews is weird. Like, he's a gatekeeper to a gatekeeper. You know, he's not a gatekeeper to the top 15 or the top 10 in a way like Derek Brunson is. But if you beat Jake Matthews, like you said, you're going to have a fairly big name opponent next. You're going to get one of those 20 to 15 guys probably. And it will be a really fun fight for Andrea if he is able to get to that point. Because Jake Matthews is a very strange fighter. He's like a bridge. Like, bridges, when everything's right, they're very good. They're structurally sound. Everything's good.
Then you watch, like, one of those videos on Reddit and the bridge is...
You know Point Pleasant with Mothman? Like, Mothman took down that bridge, right? You gotta watch out for Mothman. Well, the thing about a bridge is, if you take out one point of it, the whole thing falls, because they're built that way so that everything supports itself. Jake Matthews is like a well-put-together bridge that you're a little bit worried about, because when everything's going right, is he a good grappler? Yeah, he's a good grappler. He can wrestle. He has good offensive submissions. He can get out from under guys if he is on his back, even though I would say that's probably the weakest part of his grappling game. Is he a good striker? Well, he dropped Li Jingliang twice when he fought him, and I'd say Li Jingliang's a pretty good striker. So yeah, Jake Matthews can get it done on the feet too. But Matthews does have a bit of an Achilles heel, and he is cut from that Alistair Overeem cloth, to where you do worry about Matthews every time he gets hit clean. And the Anthony Rocco Martin fight was one of the first fights that it really stood out, because on the feet, Matthews was looking good early on. In the grappling, Matthews was looking good early on. But the second he started to slow down even a little bit and he became a little bit more hittable, his footwork completely went away. His hands that started up by his chin, they ended up down by his waist. And Rocco Martin hit him with a really nice clean shot up the middle. It hurt Jake Matthews, who shot for a panic takedown. And next thing you know, he's getting tapped out by a guy who, nothing against Rocco Martin, but going into that fight, I don't think a lot of people were predicting him to win that fight by submission. It was just the fact that he was able to rock Matthews. Matthews didn't really know what was going on. A scramble ensues, and Martin's able to get the submission win. The thing about Jake Matthews is, his wins seem to be over guys who he should probably be beating. And when he does seem to get one of those top tier guys, he comes up short. But again, that Li Jingliang win is by far the best win that either one of these guys have in their careers. And that's always something I fall back on when I'm looking at a Jake Matthews fight. Because when everything's going right for him, like I said, he's not a weak grappler. He's not a poor striker by any means. But his gas tank's only good, not great. And He's a fighter who can't fight tired. There's some fighters who, when they get tired, they can still fight at pretty much their maximum capacity.
Like Julian Arosa.
That's a good example. I even think, like, Dustin Poirier, when he fought Max Holloway, in the first two rounds, he could hurt Holloway with his power shots. And in the last couple of rounds, he's definitely tired, but he can still fight in a way that it's still sustainable and he can still win rounds even though he is tired. With Matthews, he does become a very different fighter if he is pushed heavily in a fight. And I do worry about him fighting a guy like Fiala, who has really good power in his hands, and when you're fighting someone with a suspect chin, it might only take one shot.
Well, listen, for Andrea Fialho, I think people are starting to figure this out. We touched on it back in January more so when he was making his UFC debut. He said, okay, the fight against Chris Curtis, the fight against Glycho Franca, you look at some of these fights that he has lost, and he struggled with the takedown defense in those fights. Yes, when it comes to the striking with those guys, he's having success, or, you know, it's 50-50 in the exchanges.
He can get hit, that's the only problem.
He can get hit, but he can get taken down up against the fence with some of the double legs. His takedown defense isn't bad by any stretch of the imagination. France is a good fighter, and so is Chris Curtis. You people know this by now. But if you look at it, I can point to one thing, it's that. But also, the fight against Miguel Baeza, he gets countered and hit pretty darn hard. Now, obviously, he wins by first round knockout, so numbers on a page. Well, that's pretty damn good to look at. Cameron Van Camp fight. I've said this for years now at this point, but Andrea Fialho's best punch is his lead left hook, and he can throw it in a lot of different ways. He can throw it as a check. He can throw it to open things up. He can throw it as a jab.
It's like Tommy Morrison.
Make it a straight punch. But for Fialho, okay, so he goes out there and throws a lazy left hook with Van Camp backed up against the cage. He takes a little bit more time on it. Van Camp goes left hook of his own, right hook, and Andrea Fialho is wobbling, and then Van Camp's pushing him back all the way across the cage. Now, how hurt was Fialho? I don't know, but it sent him all the way back, which kind of deviates from his game plan because he's a pressure fighter, forward-facing, best hairline in all of MMA, by the
way. I would
like,
say.
Andrea Fialho, it's a straight
line. Would Jalen Rose be proud?
Jalen Rose, or as Matt called him when he was a kid, Jalen Rose once, but that's an inside joke. Our mom's going to like that one as I crack my voice, so wow. Good fun there. But for Fialho, he then spins, reverses position, pushes Van Camp, and then throws a left hook and drops him. And Van Camp, once it's all said and done, he's like laying down like this, like, yeah, he got me good.
But that's the thing about Fialho. It's Cameron Van Camp and it's Miguel Baeza. Those are fighters who, if you do think you're going to be in the top 15, you better beat them and you better knock them out, because that's the thing. Those aren't necessarily the fighters of even Jake Matthews' caliber. And I do think that's why this fight is so interesting, because Matthews does offer more than just sort of a one-note attack. He can go for the takedown. He can strike comfortably on his feet, at least in small portions of this fight. And like you said, for Andrea, he does struggle defensively with some of his takedowns. So let's say Matthews is able to get on top in the first round. He might look a little bit better in the second and the third. He won't have to expend as much energy on his feet. And offensively, I do think he can do enough grappling wise to where he might be able to steal a couple of rounds with his own wrestling, but I still worry about Matthews every time he eats a power shot in this matchup.
You don't see Matthews fight very often, and if you look at his five on in the time that he's had his last five fights, including the Rocco Martin fight, which was 3 years and 8 months ago, Andrea Fialho's fought 10 times. Like, Fialho's very active, and even for him, he had a period of inactivity from the Bellators over to PFL, to LFA, and now he's been on a run, UAE Warriors, ex-MMA against James Vick, and into the UFC. So, good opportunity for both guys. We look at the odds in this fight. Fialho open to minus 150, minus 155 right now. Jake Matthews open plus 130, plus 127, or thereabouts. We have a look at the votes on Tapology. Surprise to us, there to you. Now, listen, I understand how Tapology works. I'm going to say over under 80% Fialho.
Probably over.
I'm going to say over. Oh, wow. 755 total votes, 80% Fialho, 81% by knockout. For the 20% that have Matthews, 82% by decision. Matt, Jake Matthews, I mean, well-rounded with his striking, I guess, would you say, with striking offense. He's not going to throw any, you know, odd-angle punches. He's no Zhalgash Umagulov
no.
out there. But he is very, very steady. It's just, yeah, for a guy that came into the UFC at 19, I know he's 10-5, but he doesn't fight very often, never getting the wins over those top guys. To me, Andrea Fialho's boxing got him to the dance, and I think it's going to get him a win this weekend.
Is Song Yadong the only good teenager who's ever been in the UFC? It's just, it doesn't often work out for these guys who come in when they're 19, 20 years old, and we have these great expectations for them. I guess Chase Hooper's looked better as of late, to his credit.
Mahashata could look good for him. He's 22 this weekend.
Well, yet to be seen, though. Not in the UFC yet. So, for Fialho, I do expect him to be able to win this fight. For Matthews, I do worry about his durability in this matchup, even in the first round. Again, I expect him to start really strong and fade as this fight progresses, but even in the first round, I can see Fiala winning by stoppage.
Big time opportunity for both guys. We're going with the guy at a Deerfield Beach who's made the jump over to Singapore with Brendan Allen, a couple guys out of Sanford. So both of us with Fiala in this matchup. You let us know who you have. Is it the Celtic kid, Jake Matthews, or will it be Fiala? And some big time fights left on this card. Two title fights up at the top. Teixeira taking on Jiří Procházka, BJP. So you're going to want to keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, people in the know are very excited about 22-year-old Chinese phenom Mahashata making his UFC debut. He main evented the season finale of last year's season, number 5, Dana White's Contender Series, getting a win over a Canadian with one of the most interesting names you've ever heard. It was Achilles, and I want to make sure that I get this one right, Estramarada, and in that one, the Canadian former BTC lightweight champ from Vancouver, BC, was a giant favorite. I mean, Mahashata in that fight was plus 475 underdog in that fight. And listen, at the start of it, you kind of get Mahashata making his walk in. Lorisenko's narrating it going, hey, Michael Bisping and I had a hard time finding any fight tape on this fight. And I took that like Isaiah Thomas talking about Michael Jordan not getting on the Dream Team. And I took that personally. So I went out there, and this is what you need to do. Can't find the fight tape? Go on Mahashata's Tapology page. Take the Chinese characters next to his name, you put those into Google, and you go into the weird corners of the Chinese network of the internet, and you find the fight tape of Mahashata. It is out there. But Matt, what I do have to say about this is, this guy, for being a 22-year-old prospect, is a very polished striker. And that's what I absolutely love out of his game. He's going to meet fire with fire coming up this weekend. Take on Mean Machine Steve Garcia, a guy who finished Charlie Ontiveros in his last fight and lost in his UFC debut. And a guy who's fought a level of competition outside of the UFC coming in, but a guy who probably not like top of mind, tip of the tongue for a lot of UFC fans is Mean Machine Steve Garcia. So Matt, for Heiser Mahashata, probably a good piece of matchmaking, I guess, giving him Garcia. I don't have the highest of hopes out of this fight, but Mahashata had a hell of a first round, his last time out against old Achilles Estramarada. And in that fight, I'm surprised he didn't get finished at multiple instances.
And let's think about both of these guys. They're both hittable. And I do think that it will be a very entertaining fight. That's the thing. Both guys' styles will cater towards each other. I do think they're both hittable enough to where they'll meet each other in the middle of the ring. And honestly, not that whoever lands first is going to win, but whoever wins that first exchange, you'll probably be able to figure out how the rest of the fight's going to go. Because I do think Mahashata is the much faster striker on the feet. I do think he has, better accuracy. He at least throws these straighter shots. But if Garcia can use his physicality and try to bully him up against the cage, I could expect Garcia to have a lot more success in some of those areas. Because the looping shots of Garcia leave him wide open for counter strikers. And if you are a polished counter striker on the back foot, think about what Ode Osborne even did to Zverev. Gadashev over the past weekend. Like, he just waited, he was patient, he let the smaller guy come to him, hit him with one hook, put him down. If Garcia could just kind of implement that game plan but be a little bit more aggressive with it, I think he could have a lot of success in this fight, because I do think he will be the much more heavy-handed guy. But if he does find himself being a little bit slower to the punch, not being able to answer the two or three strikes of Mahashata with the one big strike of his own, then I think Mahashata could win a decision as this fight goes late. Because again, I do like his work rate a little bit more in this matchup, and I do think that, again, it really will rely on his technique, because if he can stay tactical, I think his strikes are going to be fast enough to where Garcia will be in a bit of a defensive shell, to where he'll be more focused on defending strikes, to where he won't be throwing his own. But if he does land one big shot early, I could think that that could change the complete tide of the fight, and Garcia could just keep on building from that point onward.
Technical offensive striking out of Mahashata, defensively back straight up with his head up, like, and his hands lower.
And against a guy like Garcia who can throw multiple power shots in a row, that's not the best game plan.
No, and Mahashata, again, like, he has great accuracy on his shots, and you talk about his work rate. His work rate's good when he gets into a brawl, but then at other points in his fights, and it's not just the fight that he had on Dana White's Contender Series. I'll point to a couple of different ones. His fight against Janza Salikabeka, in that fight, he's doing a good job. He's fighting a guy that, if he cut weight, was probably a bantamweight, but he didn't cut weight, and he was short and just kind of filled out. I think is the nice way to put
it. He looked like modern Mark Munoz.
Yeah, who has gym wars sometimes, I guess. Allegedly.
Allegedly. I wasn't there. But guess what? His wrestling team's probably better at boxing than most other wrestling teams.
But for Mahashata in that fight, like, his opponent doesn't offer up a whole hell of a lot. I mean, the more filled out guy is backing up with throwing spinning wheel kicks to the head.
It was like a tiny Chris Barnett.
Whiffing on the air. But what I did learn out of Mahashata is the guy's plum clench is good. And once he gets it, he can move his opponents around. I talked about that earlier about Ramona Pascual. We're very physical in that clinch. Mahashata cut from the same cloth. But they're in the clinch and he just kind of throws a short right hand. And his opponent just falls all the way across the cage, tumbles down. And he just kind of lays there. And then Mahashata stacks his guard and he just throws punches like it's UFC 4. And you never get finishes like that. But Mahashata did. And I went back and I watched his debut fight, his lone loss against Goncharov. And it was like swimming through mud for Mahashata. He gets taken down with such ease. And in the M1 Global Hybrid Rage, and people are going, what the hell's a rage, Craig? Oh, it's the ring cage hybrid that M1 Global thought was the cats behind. In that one, Mahashata could not get up once he got taken down. His ground game was very, very bad. And like I gotta say, the guy's 22. He's only gonna get better. From his striking, I've seen progressions. His kicks are great. I know the broadcast was a little bit critical of his jump teep kicks to the body and like his kicks that he had in his last fight.
Paige Van Zandt-esque.
It was a lot of fun to watch, but I have to stress this. This guy gets caught looking and watching and taking Teddy Atlas pictures, as they say. And it's one of those things that, especially as you're coming into the UFC at 22, there's not a lot of room to grow. So it's not really, they're not doing him any favors, even though Steve Garcia is probably at the lower end of the echelon of lightweights. Mahashata could end up being a very good prospect. Like, no, you just compared him like a very young fighter coming into the UFC, like Song Yadong was out of China. But Mahashata doesn't have that experience that a guy like Song Yadong had.
Exactly. And for Yadong, it was a slow burn. He took some losses here and there. He had some close fights. He had some tough fights. And then now we've realized his total potential. I think this is a really tough fight for Mahashata in his UFC debut. And it's not because Steve Garcia is some great world beater. It's that he can fight fighters, get them up against the cage, and try to unload power shots. And he could shoot for the takedown when he does find himself having that wrestling advantage. And in this fight, I do expect him to have a wrestling advantage. And if he does find himself almost crashing into range, which might not be a great idea, he could be on the receiving end of some counter shots. He could almost find himself just unintentionally going for some wrestling exchanges. And I do think that could be really good out of Steve Garcia's side. So I do slightly favor him in this matchup early on in the week.
I mean, for Mahashata, somebody might say, well, he's the Xinjiang Greco-Roman silver medalist.
Wow.
But I haven't seen that in his MMA fight. So I do look at this one. I have a look at the odds. Mahashata opened a plus 250. The line's quickly corrected itself. He's a plus 130 today. Garcia opened at a minus 300. Minus 158. We have a look at the Tapology votes, Matt. Surprise to us as they are to you. I'm going to say more known commodity Garcia over under 65%.
I'll say over.
I'm going to say over, and it is slightly under 705 total votes. 63% Garcia, 56% by decision, 34% by knockout for the 37% that have Mahashata, 82% by decision, Matt. We talked about it for Garcia. Before he came into the UFC, he had fights against Ronnie Lawrence, a win, a split decision loss against Ricky Tercios, and a loss by decision by former multiple-time Bellator champ, old Joe Warren. Joe Warren, longtime veteran of the game. Matt, for Mahashata, level of competition wasn't quite there, but I like Mahashata, big fighter for Garcia, experience at bantamweight and featherweight on the way up, but he is a bigger lightweight. He does look like he's got a little bit more around the middle.
Sure.
But I do like Garcia here. Again, Mahashata, very crisp striker, lasts all three rounds. But when Dana White was talking about him, it was, and I want to make sure that I get somewhat close to paraphrasing him. He said, this kid was the biggest dog. Achilles is a massive stud. Younger than most guys we'd sign, but we're going with him anyway. I don't like any of that.
No, I don't either. And I kind of tipped my hand earlier, but I do like Steve Garcia in this matchup. Not because he's some great lightweight, but his strengths do kind of fall into Mahashata's weaknesses. So I do like Garcia.
Striker's going to win. which one will it be? Both of us going with, it's such a bad nickname, the Mean Machine. Yeah. Steve Garcia to get the win. It sounds like a vacuum cleaner, the Mean Machine. Going with Garcia. Let us know who you have below in this fight. Hit up that comment section through every single one of these fights and keep it locked in for the rest of them because we have two big title fights up at the top. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. As we always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend at featherweight, one of my favorite fights of the weekend, we have Sting Sungwoo Choi, and he's looking to go out there and put on an impressive performance against Kuya Joshua Kulibao. And Matt, I look at this song and I think about, you know, Sungwoo Choi, I think about Sting, and I think about, like, you know, there's a little black dot on the sun today. I'm a big fan of the Police. I love listening to their music. And I realistically think about this one as...
You said that like a robot.
This is really a clash of strikers here. I mean, you
I
look
like
at...
listening to music.
Sungwoo Choi does a great job of mixing...
Are you Craig?
He can mix his martial arts very, very well. And when I consider his fight that he had against one of those poor old Mokhtarian brothers, he was really able to do it. I mean, Ashkar Mokhtarian was just crossed up the whole damn time. It was like he could only dribble with his left hand, and Sungwoo Choi's out here just spinning the basketball
like,
on one
finger.
Look, you
know how Wayne Gretzky and his brother, if you combine their points, they would still have the most points of any brother. That's kind of like that.
Brent, he played for the Danbury Trashers. That's fun. But for Choi, he won that fight. Two judges scored it 29-26, one had it 29-25. Fence grab took a point from Sungwoo Choi in the first round. But for Choi, it's been such an interesting ride in the UFC. Like, he debuts against Movsar Evloev and loses that fight.
To be expected.
Dan Ige got his butt whooped for a couple rounds against Movsar this past weekend. Then Choi loses to Gavin Tucker in Canada. I consider that one forgivable. Goes out there and beats Mokhtarian, beats Yusuf Salal, beats Julian Rosa by finish. And then he goes out there and drops Alex Caceres, gets confused and overexcited, and then loses to Alex Caceres by submission. So for Choi, he's picking up the pieces. He's taking on Kulibao, who won his first UFC fight. But for Kulibao, I didn't know what kind of a fighter we were going to get coming into UFC. Lost to Jalen Turner, but that's one that's forgivable. Drawn his record against Charles Jourdain, where he loses considerably at the start of that fight. And then Jourdain's like, what's this guy still doing in this fight? I don't know what to do. And then his last time out a year ago, Kulibao beat Shayulan Nordumbeka by decision. And for Nordumbeka, this was the big point, Matt. The guy went 2 of 9 on takedown attempts because I'm a wrestler and I only know how to wrestle but not strike. And Kulibao was able to take advantage of that. So for Kulibao, very good striker. For Choi, very good striker. Kulibao's good on the back foot and he can switch stances, great counters. Choi is great with his forward pressure. And one of the fighters that I love because he understands how to use his length and his height in his fights. And I like that.
He does. And this is a very well-matched fight between these two guys. Because for Kulibao, he has great defensive wrestling. And I do expect Sungwoo Choi at some point to start shooting for takedowns. Because for Sungwoo Choi, he's almost like D'Angelo Russell. He does the hard things very well, but some of the easier things, you're kind of surprised that he's not able to do in his fights, and he will lack composure at some points, really throughout all of his fights. Like, his defensive grappling against Gavin Tucker was a huge problem for him. He was not able to keep up with the work rate of Gavin Tucker, and you could tell he was just a step behind in most of the grappling sequences throughout that fight, and the same thing could be said even in the Alex Caceres fight. And Alex Caceres is not a grappler.
What about the Movsar Evloev fight?
Okay. Here's the thing. Most people are going to get out grappled by Movsar Evloev.
Callback, Movsar was the king of pain in that fight.
Yeah, he beat the brakes off poor Sungwoo Choi. But that's the thing. Sungwoo Choi's losses are two fairly good fighters. Gavin Tucker, a very well-rounded fighter. Alex Caceres, sort of the forever gatekeeper to the top 15, the 16th ranked featherweight, if you will. And for Sungwoo Choi, when it does look good, it does look very good. He is able to strike into the clinch, go for takedowns, and when he is able to get offensive takedowns, he looks really good in that top position. He has good ground and pound, and he will threaten with submissions somewhat, but he is much more just trying to get into that half guard, trying to get you softened up with some of his own ground and pound. But I don't think he's going to be able to get the takedown on Kulibao. I really don't. I honestly think Kulibao could even get his own offensive takedown in this matchup, because at range it'll be interesting. The power of Kalibao might keep Sung Woo Choi from engaging with him all that much on the inside, but I do think that if Kalibao isn't answering a lot with his own power shots, if he's playing almost like a Uriah Hall type of game where he just finds himself waiting and waiting and waiting, that's when Sung Woo Choi can build a huge lead early on in this fight, because Sung Woo Choi might not be the best defensive grappler, might not be the best defensive striker, but he does have a fairly steady work rate throughout his fight, so I do expect him to have the similar success that he has in the first round. He'll be able to have it in the third as well.
And I'll throw it up there on the screen for Joshua Kalibao, training out of Igor MMA. In the camp in the last couple of weeks, Jamie Mullerkey, a part of it. Martin Wynn, former ONE Championship champ, in and around these weight classes, 155, 145. You look at it for Choi, he was originally supposed to take on Tucker Lutz not that long ago. And I'll throw that one up there. He had the longest bit of text in an Instagram post I've ever seen. So I translated it, and he basically said at the end of it, to boil it down and put it in English, that he had a minor injury, but he just couldn't make it anyway. Short recovery time. So I'm not too worried about Choi recovering from injury, making it into this fight against Kalibao. We look at the odds for this fight. Choi open to minus 250, minus 238 right now. Kalibao open to plus 210, plus 191 or thereabouts. We have a look at the Tapology vote. Surprise to us there, to you. But I'm going to say over under 75% Sung Woo Choi.
I think they'll be over. I
think they're going to be over. They are over. 734 total votes, 83% Choi, 42% by decision, 49% by knockout. For the 17% that have Kalibao, 65% by decision, 24% by knockout. 49% of fans think Sung Woo Choi is going to knock out Joshua Kalibao. I think Joshua Kalibao is made in a lab where they make the Beyond Meat $2 steaks. But those Beyond Meat $2 steaks, they don't exist. They don't make them for $2. Unless you get them on sale or on clearance. But Matt, I do like Sung Woo Choi. Again, you mentioned the work rate. He's a very precise striker, and there's not a lot of wasted movement out of Sung Woo Choi. Good in and out. He's not really a big side-to-side movement type of guy, but I do like his footwork nonetheless. But I like Choi in this, although I do think it's a very well-matched fight.
It is going to be a phenomenal fight, I think, and this is what I'll say. I think Sung Woo Choi is going to win this fight against Kalibao, but I don't know if he does any one thing well enough to ever get into the rankings. Again, he might look phenomenal in this fight, and I'll completely change my opinion, but I do think he will have to sort of sharpen that one area of his game that he's going to decide, okay, this is what I can go to when the going gets tougher. This is what I can always fall back on. Because, again, his wrestling is good but not great. His striking is good but not great. He doesn't really specialize in any one area, so if he is able to develop his striking a little bit more, develop his grappling a little bit more, maybe we will talk about him as a future top 15 or ranked fighter. But as of right now, I like him in this matchup, but I do think he has a limited ceiling.
Both of us going with Team Mad's own Sting, Sung Woo Choi, to get the win and starting up a brand new day. I really do like this fight at 145. We get some big fights at the top of this card. Title fight at 125, title fight at 205. So keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Turns out now, three fights into the UFC, Jacob Malkoon, the Mamba, deserves our respect. And he's not just Robert Whittaker's training partner, because the guy that we were expecting to see coming into the UFC, who got starched by Phil Haas very early on, ended up beating Abdulrazak Al-Hassan quite soundly. And he fought in his last time out, the former Strikehard Productions main eventer. That's a real callback. AJ Dobson. In the second, third rounds, you could easily give him 10-8 scorecards for those rounds, because he absolutely dominated the action in the first round. He didn't, but he's going to be taking on now the former LFA middleweight champion, All In, Brendan Allen, who's gone all in on his training. He's from Louisiana originally, then he went to Rufus Sport, and really it's a real going across America story. Now it's Sanford MMA. He's made the trip over to Singapore this week with his teammate Andrea Fialho, who's also on this card. And for Allen, what we've seen out of him in the UFC is a continued progression in his striking. We already knew how good of a grappler he could be. He's been taken down in some fights. He's also taken down many fighters in the UFC. And if I can go fight by fight, Matt, because people are going to do this, they're going to go, well, Craig, I went on UFC stats, Brendan Allen's takedown defense is 50%, and I'd say, okay, but let's talk about it. Kevin Holland went 1 of 1, Tom Breeze went 0 of 1, Chris's brother, Kyle Daukaus went 3 of 5, Strickland went 1 of 1, Carl Robertson went 0-0. Soriano went 0-0. Then Curtis and Alvey both didn't try and take Brendan Allen down. Not a lot of people trying to take Brendan Allen.
And he won all but one of those fights.
Well, he's 6-2 in the UFC.
Well, no, but of all the people who had gone for takedown, Sean Strickland is the only person to have been able to beat him.
Exactly. So for Brendan Allen, his ground game was always his bread and butter, but he's crisped up his hands, and you've seen that in his fights now. When he fought Sean Strickland, he looked confused by the striking, but apart from that, it's been the Brendan Allen show on the feet as well, with a couple of wrinkles, so to speak. But I look at this fight as Malkoon is also getting better with his hands. I know defensively leaves a lot to be desired, and he did in his fight against AJ Dobson, the longer, taller fighter, which is going to be every fighter at middleweight for Jacob Malkoon, because he's at a disadvantage height-wise. But the weird thing is, we talk about this, if you're tall in a weight class, sometimes it can be harder fighting some of those shorter fighters. But you look at it, Matt, for Jacob Malkoon, always fighting taller fighters, he tends to put his hands out and his head back, and that's tough. That's tough.
This fight for Jacob Malkoon is like this upcoming season for Tua Tagovailoa, and this is why. It's sink or swim. Like, if Jacob Malkoon loses this fight, it's pretty much it for the Jacob Malkoon train. Yes, he's young, but he has stumbled a few times. His win is over a blown-up welterweight and a guy who was making his UFC debut, and if he loses dominantly to a guy like Brendan Allen, I don't expect Malkoon to be around for much longer, but if he's able to beat Brendan Allen, he does jump up in the rankings quite a bit, and I don't expect him to get a spot in the rankings, but you get the idea. Wherever Tapology has him ranked right now, with a win over Brendan Allen, it will shoot him up quite a bit higher than he's currently at. But this is I don't want to say an impossible fight for Malkoon to win, but I do think this is going to be an extremely difficult fight stylistically for Malkoon, because Brendan Allen is getting better on the feet, but he's not a fighter that I expect going out there beating guys in the top 25 solely off of his stand-up. He can throw some kicks, he's got better boxing, but again, his bread and butter is on the ground with his offensive grappling, his ground and pound, and his submission ability. And I think he's way better at grappling than Jacob Malkoon is. And for Malkoon, I also really don't think his striking's on the level to where he can go out there and win a fight solely based from his stand-up. So at some point, someone's going to shoot for a takedown. And when this fight hits the ground, Malkoon has shown the ability to hold his opponent down. He has a very good gas tank, and I do expect him to have a very similar game plan from round one to round three. But the highs definitely are not as high as what Brendan Allen is able to do on the ground. Allen hurts guys with elbows, with ground and pound. He does advance past a full guard. He will try to be very offensive with his own grappling. And that's what I think is the biggest difference between these two guys. Malkoon can grapple, but it's not the most exciting style to watch, if we are being fair. And Brendan Allen, when he grapples, he is very active with his own offense. And I do think he can make Malkoon pay for being on his back. And I don't know if Malkoon can do the same thing against Allen, because Kevin Holland had Brendan Allen hurt and took his back, and Brendan Allen was still able to reverse that position and get a submission win over Kevin Holland.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it for Malkoon, Gracie Grange in Australia. He is a guy that's training no-gi jiu-jitsu all the damn time. And his takedown entries, I mean, listen, when he took on Al Hassan, he went 8 of 24, but he got over 11 minutes of control time, and it was good. It wasn't pleasant to watch. And then when he took on his last time out Dobson, he went 6 of 16 on his takedown attempts, 9 minutes, 17 seconds of control time. But that was round 2 and round 3. He was able to do all of that and accumulate it. And for Dobson, who was a wrestler, he just couldn't get back up to his feet. So it's going to be interesting to see what we get coming up out of this one. And I said Malkoon deserves respect. Matt threw him like a half a bone.
I just think this is a really hard fight for him because of his strengths. All of Brendan Allen's overlap with him. And I do think Brendan Allen is exceptional in some areas where Jacob Malkoon's only good at. Now, again, if Malkoon is able to get to the third round, Kyle Daukaus had some success with his longevity in that fight. He was able to look good later on. But I do think Allen's striking has leveled up considerably since that fight. So I think Allen can make Malkoon pay on the feet a little bit more than he was able to back in the Daukaus days.
Yeah, if you look at it for Brendan Allen, I'll put it up there. The guys he's training with at Sanford, yeah, Jacob Malkoon, it's a Robert Whittaker card if it's a Jacob Malkoon card, and it was supposed to be a Robert Whittaker card this weekend against Vettori, but they moved that fight. For Allen, he's training with Phil Haas, he's training with Fialho, he's training with, not Fialho, I guess Fialho's at 170, and I know they're over in Singapore, but look at that picture and all the 185ers that are there at Sanford. They have a whole room of 185ers, so it's insane to see that. You look at the odds here, Allen open to minus 190 favorite, minus 243 average on best fight odds. For Malkoon, open to plus 165, plus 196. We have a look at the topology vote. Surprise to us, they are to you. I'm going to say over under 85% Allen.
Over.
Slightly under. Look at that. 835 total votes, 84% Allen, 34% by decision, 46% by submission, 15% by knockout for the 16% that I'm Al Kuhn, 69% by decision. Phil Haas is in that room with Brendan Allen. He's going to tell him, hey, Brendan, walk across the cage and punch him once. He goes down like a sack of potatoes. I don't know if Brendan Allen's going to be able to do that, but I think Brendan Allen's going to be able to win the fight.
I like him a lot in this matchup. Again, Allen isn't necessarily the fighter I thought he was going to be. I had really high hopes for him, and maybe he is able to level up his striking to where his striking matches his grappling, and maybe we'll get a really exciting fighter moving forward, because again, he's only 26 years of age, so he can still get better at this stage of his career, but he does eat a lot of damage. Luckily, Jacob Malkoon's not the type of guy who can inflict a lot of damage on the feet, so I do like Brendan Allen in this fight.
Jacob Malkoon's also 26. He could level up. It could happen this weekend for Malkoon, a giant opportunity. For Brendan Allen, I don't know. I don't know why he's taking this fight.
He needs the win, though.
He needs the win, coming off a win at 205 against smiling Sam Alvey. He's still with the promotion.
He is.
Big-time opportunity. Both of us going with our namesake to get the win in this fight. Some big fights on the rest of this card. Two title fights up at the top. Let's keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say,
let's get into it.
Time fight at welterweight. Coming up this weekend, we have the former eternal welterweight champion, Jack Della Maddalena, taking on the former M1 Global middleweight champ, Goretz Ramazanimeev. And for Jack Della Maddalena, he's kind of going from like the basement to the penthouse in terms of a booking situation, because he fought Dead Game Pete Rodriguez in the respective UFC debuts his last time out, finished him in the first round. And now he's getting Ramazanimeev, a guy who... Well, the book's been out on Ameev for years now. What's he going to do, Matt? I can tell you exactly what he's going to do. First round, wrestle. Second round, wrestle. Third round, cardio kickboxing.
That's the weird thing about Ramazanimeev. Like, he knows what he's good at for about 10 minutes. And then, what's that movie where Drew Barrymore can't remember anything?
51st Dates.
There you go. Ramazanimeev every third round is like Drew Barrymore when she wakes up. He's like, wait... Who am I married to? What am I good at? And it turns out he's not a good striker whatsoever, but he wakes up thinking he is.
It's like Ramazanimeev goes, let's give the people a show. I know what they want. The Ramazan show. Let's go kickboxing.
If he strikes for 30 seconds against Jack Della Maddalena, he's going to be unconscious in this fight. Because here's the thing about Jack Della Maddalena. I said this last week about how Aaron Blanchfield, I thought very highly of her. I still think quite highly of her, all things considered. But... I think of her what most people think of Miranda Maverick, and luckily it's paid off for me. Whatever you think of Ian Gary, scratch that right now. Jack Della Maddalena is exactly what people think Ian Gary is, and I gotta be honest, if they fought right now, I think he'd destroy Ian Gary. Bit of a hot take, but that's what we're here for. Jack Della Maddalena is a really, really nice prospect coming out of Australia. And I gotta be honest, Australia, ever since like the Robert Whittaker boom, because like Robert Whittaker is sort of like the Michael Bisping for Australian fighters. There wasn't a lot. I guess Ross Pearson probably is. He had
Dan Kelly.
Ross Pearson at least was the coach for that season, UFC Smashes, which got Robert Whittaker into the UFC. So there were a few before, but Whittaker was kind of the first UFC champion and the first fighter of championship caliber. And now we have seen so many more fighters from that region of the world. And Jack Della Maddalena does sort of represent the next evolution in Australian MMA, because he is extremely well-rounded. And this is going to be a really interesting fight against a guy like Ramazanimeev, who, like you said, he's going to wrestle with everything he has for 10 minutes of this fight. But the good news is, it's almost like you're fighting Anthony Rumble Johnson. With Rumble, it was, you gotta survive 3 minutes. Now, those 3 minutes are very, very hard to survive, and very few people have been able to. But if you're able to withstand that big storm, it gets much easier on the other side. With Ramazanimeev, if you can defend some of those early takedowns and really make him pay for the entries, the fight is going to get easier minute after minute, round after round. And this is why this fight, it's more interesting to me than competitive, because I do think Ramazanimeev, he can have a lot of success early on in this fight with his wrestling, but this is going to be a great litmus test for Jack Della Maddalena, because if he is able to beat Ramazanimeev, let's say he can defend those takedowns early, that's going to give me a lot more confidence in his overall takedown defense moving forward, because Ramazanimeev, if he is great at anything, it is securing takedowns, so being able to defend takedowns from a guy like that will put a lot more stock into his takedown defense moving forward. And let's say he is able to get the finish over a guy like Ramazanimeev, who is quite durable, can take a shot, can last late into fights, I think it will prove that Jack Della Maddalena is sort of one of the bigger fish in the welterweight prospect pond, if you will. But If Ramsey and Aviv have success in that first round, in that second round, Madeline is going to be under a lot of pressure to just go out there and try to get a finish in those last 5 minutes, and that's going to be a very tough ask.
Yeah, like, you look at this fight, and for Della coming into this one, I mean, the guy can strike well from both stances. Oh, yeah. His best weapon, I've talked about it earlier with some other fighters, but his left hand, like, if he's working from orthodox, it's the left hook. If he's working from southpaw, throws it straight down the middle. Like, he can do a lot of different things with just that one weapon, and you love to see it. And for Della, moves well on the back foot and keeps his head moving, which you love to see, like a high-level prospect should. But this is a guy that lost his first two pro fights. Most people go, well, I'm going to throw in the towel now. And then he won 10 straight, and he told his coach that if he won his 10th fight, he'd get into the UFC, and son of a gun, didn't he end up doing that. He beats Angeloso, who's now in the UFC in his own volition, but then he fights Pete Rodriguez. And listen, Pete Rodriguez is... dead game, I get it. Like, he's got a lot of knockout wins, and he's a first-round guy. But it was originally supposed to be friggin' Warley Alves. Like, that's how highly the UFC thinks of a guy like Della. Matching him up with Warley Alves, only to get Pete Rodriguez at short notice. And now Ramazan Ameev. I mean, again, I say the book's been out on Ameev for a really long time. Former M1 Global middleweight champ. But in the UFC, it went over Sam Alvey, Alberto Mina, who... they got to 13-1. The UFC was like, you're not taking this fight? Okay, see you later. They released him, beats Stefan Sekulic, loses to Rocco Martin, beats Nicholas Stutz, beats David Zavada by split decision, loses to Danny Roberts by split decision, which was a weird one. But I look at the other fights, like a win over Anatoly Tarkov by majority decision. Anatoly Tarkov doesn't fight very often, but he's one of Bellator's best middleweights. So... good wins for Ameev on his record, and the length of his, again, a win by finish over Albert Duraev, who I wish would fight more often as well. This is just a weird one because Della is definitely way better with the stand-up. I've seen in some of his fights in the regional scene where he gets held up against the cage and he can't really put off much of his own offense, but listen, newsflash, he won those fights when he was able to get back out in distance and separated, but he will get held up, and against a guy like Ameev, it does give me pause. So I look at the odds in this one. Della opened at plus 130, but he's now minus 139. If you look at it for Ameev, line flip, open minus 150, now a plus 113 or thereabouts, 115. We have a look over on Tapology. Surprise us there to you. Fans like Jack Telemadelainen's style. Fans don't like Ramazan Ameev's style. I like it because it's like, well, I know what I'm going to get.
Okay, Robin Black, I'm going to be honest. Ramazan Ameev is the cure for insomnia. It is tough to watch.
Ramazan Ameev, show that to your friends that don't like MMA. Just show them the third round. I'm going to say over under 70% Jack Della.
Over, without a doubt.
It is over 766 total votes, 81%. Della, 52% by decision, 40% by knockout for the 19% that have Ameev. 82% by decision, Matt. Ramazan Ameev, weird that he went down to, I guess, welterweight kind of late in his career. And if you look at it, out of the overall losses that he have, he's been finished once by knockout and once by submission. Will he get knocked out this weekend?
He very well could, and this is the type of opponent who can make him pay for his entries. That's why I like Jack Della Maddalena in this matchup. Ramazan Ameev can win two rounds, but he's not going to damage you a lot in those first two rounds. So I do think Maddalena will have the door open for him to get back in the third round, rally, have one of those like Darren Elkins, Mursad Bektic type comebacks if he is losing the first two rounds. Because like you said, Ameev does have a striking mindset in the third round, and he's not that great at it. He's a very fatigued striker by the time that round comes around. And I'm telling you, Della Maddalena can strike with the best of them at welterweight. Like, yes, he's 10-2, or 11-2, sorry. Yes, he lost his first two fights, but, like, his striking is as crisp as they come. He can strike from both stances. He has a very educated jab. He has a good left hand, like you said, from both stances. And I do think he is improving at only 25 years of age. So I think Della Maddalena is the type of fighter who, if you're not on board and you're not watching right now, like, get on board, because a win over Ramzan Ameev, maybe to a casual UFC fan, they won't put a lot of stock into it. You know, Ameev's kind of boring. It's not that great. But if you're a prospect who's only 13 fights into his professional career and you're able to beat someone like Ramzan Ameev, who is a big welterweight, knows what he's good at, has a dedicated game plan, that's really going to speak to how good Della Maddalena can be in the future.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Della is only 25 years old. Ameev, welterweight, 35 years old. I think he gets to win this weekend. I think you win the first round, you win the second round. The third round, I've talked about it all video. Ramazan comes out in the third round with his fist down at his sides, and walk straight forward into guys.
It's like prime Fedor, but with none of the skills on the feet.
Like, I'm going up against Jean-Claude Van Damme, final boss, Ramazan Ameev. Here comes Goretz. But I think if you can bank the first and the second, this is a guy that, like you said, dedicated game plan and does not stray away from it. And I understand the split decision loss to Danny.
And then Drew Barrymore's the third round.
Danny Roberts notwithstanding. But I love the fact that he just goes to the well with the wrestling. He has a decided advantage against anybody that he fights in that area. And I think he's going to win the fight off of his wrestling. So I hate myself for saying it because I love Jack Della so much and I love his style. But I'm going to go with the now underdog Goretz Ramazan Ameev. We're split on the pick. You have Australia's Della. Let us know down below in the comment section. 80% on Tapology with Della. I know the fans absolutely love him, and so do I. But split on that pick. Big fights on the rest of this card, including the rematch between Zhang Weili and Joanna Jędrzejczyk. The two title fights up at the top. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. The pulsing effect has no effect in Singapore. This is my favorite fight this weekend. I said that for one of the other matchups, Sung Woo Choi. He's got a big fight against Josh Koulibal. But if you really want it, it's at flyweight. Flyweight never die. Rogerio Bontorin is going to be taking on... I'm a star boy, Manel Kopp. And listen, Matt, getting ready for this fight and doing my notes, I watched the Coachella performance of the weekend. Wow. It was fun. I'm good. I'm great. And for Manel Kopp, I expected that out of him. And when he made his UFC debut and fought Alessandro Pantoja, it's like he fought in a mirror. When he fought Mateusz Nicolau, it's like he fought in a mirror. And he just couldn't get going. He couldn't start me up. I'm done with the music references. But his last two fights, he's looked amazing. Now, it's been a big step down in competition. And at 125, there's not much of a big step of competition because there's not that many guys that fight in the division. But he finished Ode Osborne coming in thick. And then he beat Zhalgas Shumagulov his last time out. There are quality wins, though. And for Kopp, he's riding a wave of success. He's supposed to fight Sue Muttergee a couple of weeks ago. Turinabol Metabolite, Nevada State Athletic Commission said you got to go on a six-month testing program. He said, okay, that's good. But the UFC didn't suspend him. USADA didn't suspend him. So he can fight in Singapore, so it's not an issue. And personally, like, I don't have an issue. I'm saying it to be funny, but the whole Turinabol thing, it was under 100, picograms, so it doesn't really matter. So it doesn't matter. So for me, Kopp, I don't care about it. But when I look at it in his fighting style, over with Ryzen with wrestling shoes, good takedown defense, good on the mat. But I tell you, in the UFC, he has been susceptible to getting taken down. Good first move back up to his feet, but Nicolau had some success there. Pantoja did as well. If they did, then surely to goodness, Rogerio Bontorin might. But the one thing that I like out of this for Kopp is that Bontorin's willing to get into a brawl. And when Bontorin wants to brawl, Kopp can stay technical. And I like that in this fight.
I'm going to zag a little bit. I agree with what you said 100%. You are right. Kopp's the more technical guy. But he doesn't often win when he's being pressured. Like when Pantoja had success and when Nicolau had success, it was when they decided, hey, we don't have to respect his punching power. We can let our hands go. And that's when they were able to build during their rounds. When things are chaotic, I do feel like Kopp can get overwhelmed a little bit on the inside. And I do think that almost speaks to how he gets taken down too. Because over in Ryzen, yes, it was the shoes, of course. But I do think he was just a little bit more active or a little bit more aware on the inside when guys could get on the inside of his punching power. And I do think if Bontorin is able to just make this fight chaotic early on, I think he can have a lot of success because I know Bontorin hasn't always won his fights. Like, you look at his 5-on-in, he's 2-3. But he's had success in all of his losses, and even in his wins, yes, he might get hurt here or there, but the good thing about Bontorin is that he's a fighter that I'm not worried about when he faces adversity. Like, when the going gets tough, Rogerio Bontorin gets pretty tough, too. And yes, he can get finished, but they're tough fights before he gets finished. He's putting it on his opponent, and he's making the fight very tough. And for Kopp, I do think that might be his Achilles heel. When things are technical, when things are your strike against my strike in the middle of the cage, I think Kopp's going to be the much better fighter in this fight. But Bontorin's not the type of guy who's going to wait around and exchange a jab with you. He's going to make things chaotic early. So for me, I think the big X factor is how sustainable can Bontorin be with his wild game plan? Because if he can keep things chaotic, especially early on in this fight, and keep it going, you know, late second round, early third round, he may be able to get to such a big lead that Kopp has to go for the finish in the last 3 minutes of this fight. But if Kopp can defend the first couple of takedowns and force Bontorin to just be a wild striker on the outside, I think Kopp can have a lot of success because Bontorin on the inside with his chaos, think about Jessica Andrade on the inside, lots of power shots to the body and to the head. But on the outside, neither one of these fighters have very much, and when I say neither one, I mean Andrade and Bonturin, neither one of those fighters have much for range-finding tools or for volume-type tools on the outside. They need the brawl, so they're either lunging in too far and they're susceptible to power shots, or they're having tons of success on the inside, so this fight's going to be great no matter who wins it.
Like, if you're breaking it down for Bonturin, in the UFC, giant underdog against Magomed Bibulatov, beats him with his takedowns, with his grappling, like the wild scrambles and the movement from position to position, those really did win out for Bonturin in that one. He beats Halyan Paiva, whose eyebrow escapes him and blows up. Then he loses to Ray Borg by his own game badly, like 30-26, 30-25 territory in that one to Ray Borg. Almost beats Kai Kara-France, only to lose to him.
This is how wild that fight is. Is on the verge of winning a 10-8 round just to get knocked out in the last 30 seconds.
Last 5 seconds of the first round. Beats Max Schnell at 135 pounds and then loses to Brandon Royval by split decision. I thought Royval won that fight, but
good
again,
fight between them.
You can make an argument. Somebody won 2 rounds, somebody won 1. Now he's taking on Kopp. And Matt, we talked about Kopp and the good days behind him and this and that, because he lost the 2 fights in the UFC, beat Kai Asakura to win the belt. But again, that Mitsugaki win that he had was wild. The win over, Ian McCall.
Mitsugaki was 45 years old when they fought, to be fair. It wasn't a prime.
Yamamoto was good. You lose to Horiguchi, that's fine. You lost by split to Kai Asakura, whatever. You lose to Ulka Sasaki. Matt's always had a hate on for Ulka Sasaki.
He's trash. I'm sorry.
I liked Ulka Sasaki in the UFC.
He was built like Kevin Durant, but didn't have any of the talent.
He had a great record. He had like an Askar Mazarov record, like pre-look into it. But I do look at this fight as both very fun fighters. Bonturin's a more well-rounded guy, but he takes the X factor of wildness and turns the dial off. And from now, Kopp, if he keeps it tight, if he keeps it compact, it gets boring, but he always has that spring and that explosiveness. I like his low kicks when he decides to employ them. Manel Kopp's best strike is his lead hook, and he switches stances, which makes it very fun. So if he's fighting from southpaw, lead right hook, orthodox, lead left hook, you get the drill. But you look at the odds for this fight. Kopp, -220 favorite, roughly still there. You look at it for Bonturin, +185. I was kind of surprised Manel Kopp's that big of a favorite. I know he has 2 big first-round knockout wins his last 2 fights, but like Bonturin, and I know he's been knocked out, but
a step above Zhumagulov for sure.
Big step up. So, again, odds favoring Kopp. We have a look at the fan vote. Surprise to us there to you over on Topology. I will say, though, over under 67.5% Kopp.
I'll say under.
You're going to say under. It's way over.
People are wrong.
And 96 total votes. 88% Kopp, 78% by knockout for the 12% that are Bonturin, 60% by decision, 27% submission. Matt, I find it weird. Again, we seem to be on an island with the odds and the fans, but I think Bonturin's got way better shot than they would suggest.
I agree, but I'm still not picking him to win this fight. Again, I think Bonturin can make this fight chaotic early on, but I don't think he can do that for 15 minutes. I do think at a certain point, he will get caught by a big shot, because that's the thing about being chaotic. You swing big, you also miss big, and you leave massive openings for a guy like Kopp to be able to land his own power shots. And I know Bonturin is a big step up from Ode Osborne and from
Zhumagulov.
I almost said Zhumagulov just because Ode Osborne. But for Zhumagulov and Osborne, Bonturin is a big step up. But again, I do think the game plan is kind of similar when you're fighting a guy like Zhumagulov and Bonturin. They're both extremely aggressive. They will both mix up their striking with their takedowns. And they both do have very good cardio for 15 minutes. So I do think Kopp has fought a similar fighter to Bonturin. And other than Pantoja and Nicolau, who I do think are a step above Bonturin, I do like Kopp in this matchup. But this is what I'll say. I don't know if Kopp can ever beat a guy like Pantoja. Like, Pantoja's just a hard matchup for him. That's fine. There's bad matchups for every guy in the UFC and every single division. But I do think Kopp is going to have to either up his work rate a little bit, or maybe even implement his own wrestling a little bit more if he does want to find himself in that top 5 of the division. Because let's say he does just remain a well-known guy in the 7 to 10 range. That's fine. It's just, you can't really get a title shot off that. You got to get into the top 5 if you want a title shot. And Manel Kopp didn't come to the UFC expecting to just be a guy in the top 10. Like, he came over expecting to be a champion one day. And if he does want to do that, he's got to beat Bonturin this weekend.
He expected Joseph Benavidez to still be around to get that fight. Where's that fight for me? I like Hajerio Bonturin. So here's the weird thing. With Manel Kopp, a.k.a. Manel Kopp, couldn't beat Hajerio Bonturin. but he's not AKA Manel Cop anymore. He's Extreme Couture Cop. So I do like that switch for Cop in the last, what, couple of years to get those game
plans
in.
Have you seen Khabib's back in AKA beating everybody?
Yeah, making them work way too hard. Just making the boys puke in the back room.
He looked kind of thick after he announced his retirement. I'm sure he enjoyed himself, but
just taking down Luke Rockhold in training.
I'll give it 8% of me right now that thinks Khabib's thinking about coming back if Oliveira goes on a run. No, that's the only thing I was... Because Oliveira right now... I was talking to one of my good friends, Tim, loves MMA. And he's like, could Oliveira become better than Khabib at some point? Could he be the lightweight goat? Here's the thing. He could get better accomplishments in the lightweight division. He could stay around for longer. He could get more title defenses. But I think if we're just talking talent for talent, Prime Khabib's still the greatest fighter I've ever seen in my life. But... there is a part of me with all these videos and stuff, and with Khabib looking like his former self, I think he might be coming back.
To me, I think the greatest lightweight of all time is a guy that used to do this. It's BJ Penn. I mean, BJ Penn's my greatest lightweight of all time.
I think Nurmagomedov, if Prime Nurmagomedov fought Prime BJ Penn,
well,
it would be a Prime.
If Wayne Gretzky went up against Connor McDavid, McDavid would beat him 9 times out of 10.
Though?
But again, for the pick in this fight is Clay Collard's glove drops. For Bonturin, I like the fact that he has, from the Instagrams, only worked on strength and conditioning for this camp, and I think he's just going to work for the takedowns in this fight. Manel Cop, great movement on the feet, and if he can evade those, he's going to be able to get the win. But I like Bonturin in those positions, in the wildness. So I'm going to take a stab at the underdog here in Brazil's Bonturin. But in the battle of Portuguese speakers, Matt's got Manel Cop. I love the fight. This one should be amazing, and some big-time fights. Three of them left on this main card that you're not going to want to miss. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Coming up this weekend, a rematch of the 2020 Fight of the Year, Tapology's 7th-ranked greatest fight of all time. We have the return of Joanna champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. She has been out since that fight in early 2020, and her opponent, Magnum, Zhang Wei Li, Trojan Man. It's going to be an interesting fight because I look at this as Zhang Wei Li's made odd progressions, I guess, since that fight. She's trained out of Fight Ready MMA down in Arizona. And if you look at it, she's lost 2 fights since their original booking. She fought Rose Namajunas. She got finished early. And then she lost a split decision against Namajunas. We'll talk about that one as this video goes along. But for Zhang Wei Li, incorporated a little bit of the wrestling into that second booking with Namajunas. And I like that. But the weirdest wrinkle out of this entire one is that has Joanna Jędrzejczyk made a championship level Karolina Kowalkiewicz? Maybe she has an American Top Team. Those two had fought in the past. And Karolina looked great in her fight last weekend and retired Felice Herrig. But for Zhang Wei Li, as, you know, good as those kind of implements or improvements into her game have looked with the wrestling, for this camp in the last, 11, 12 weeks from her Instagram, she's trained at Bang Tao Muay Thai with the Hickman brothers. And that's their new gym in Thailand.
I love that move, I'm going to be honest.
So do I.
Because Wei Li Zhang, and you can think about this 2 different ways. When she had originally gone to Fight Ready, you think, okay, she's trying to make her game a little bit more well-rounded. And we saw her do that. It's just... that might not necessarily have been the best way for her to grow her game. It's like when Kevin Durant went to the Golden State Warriors. He didn't necessarily go to the Golden State Warriors just because, oh, it's a super team, it's going to make my life easier. He went there for spacing. Well, no, okay. Here's the thing. There's a guy named Moses Brown. He's a very old man. He's a legendary high school coach. He developed Kevin Durant into the player that he is. He gave him 3 moves when he was in high school, and then he just basically developed a bunch of counters off these 3 moves, and now KD is one of the greatest players ever. My point is, Kevin Durant, when he played for OKC, had no spacing. So he couldn't get better as a player because everything he did was against a double team because they didn't respect the other players on offense. So he went to a different system that worked better with his skill set, so it also made him a better player. I think Wei Li Zhang going to the Hickman Brothers' new gym is almost going to do the same thing for her game. It's not the fact that it's going to make her well-rounded and help the areas of the game that she needs help in. I just think her going back to her roots is going to make her a more familiar fighter to the fighter who fought Joanna the first time. And this might be a bit of an exaggeration, but, you know, we like boxing a little bit on this channel. The Four Kings are very famous. Hagler, Hearns, Sugar Ray Leonard, and... Roberto Duran. I almost said Arturo Gatti. Oh my goodness. But there almost is like a 4 queens in this strawweight division. You have Wei Li Zhang, Jessica Andrade, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Rose Namajunas. All 4 of these women have fought each other and multiple times at this point, but they have all been in their primes at a different stage. And that's the thing about this fight. This fight entertainment-wise, could be as good as their first fight. Don't get me wrong. Both of them are these flashy, amazing strikers on the feet. But these fighters aren't going to be at the same level that they were in their first fight. I do think Jawani and Jacek at this stage of her career has eaten a lot of damage, made a lot of money, been a big enough public figure to where the desire probably isn't there. To where, you gotta remember, this lady won a UFC title all the way back at UFC 185. Her and Rafael Dos Anjos became UFC champions in the same night. RDA's been around for a very long time, you have to remember. Like, it has been years and years and years since Joanna has been in her prime and since she had originally won a title. It's kind of like expecting Conor McGregor to come back nowadays and be the same fighter he was all the way back when he beat Chad Mendes and Jose Aldo. It's just, priorities change. Having long-term success will change your priorities. And for Joanna, like, I don't sit here thinking that she's going to be able to go through a similar fight that she did in their first fight. I don't think she's going to want to go through that again. It's just, this isn't for the title. The stakes aren't as high. They're at different stages of their career. But this is what I will say. Wei Li, I think, wakes up every day thinking, how do I get back to a UFC title shot? I think her last fight against Rose Namajunas was a very close fight. I know a lot of people had that fight for her. It was just close. That's all I'm going to say. No matter who it went to, I didn't think it was a robbery by any means. But to me, Wei Li is still thinking, how do I become a UFC champion? And for Joanna, I kind of liken it to Sugar Ray coming back at the end of his career. Like when he fought Tommy Hearns, like way back in the 80s. Like, they fought in 81 and then they fought in 89. It was a long time that had gone by since they had fought the first time. And for Joanna, like, she's done so much in her career already. I don't expect her to go into this fight and then accomplish a lot more afterwards.
I mean, the flip side of that is Anthony Pettis lost to RDA, had some competitive crazy fights after
that. But he was
that.
Never the same guy after that. He had never fought for a title.
Still winning with PFL. And for Joanna, with your analogy where you threw a dart and you hit a chessboard, it's a game. Games are games and you hit a game. But the thing that I have to say, in the first fight between Zhang Weili and Jawani and Jacek, I had a tie going into the fifth round, and I scored the fifth round for Joanna based on the shot she was able to land. I know her face, she looks like a non-human, but in that one, I actually scored it for Joanna. But then I went through...
This is as close of a fight as you can see.
Yeah, MMA decisions. 5 had it 49-46 Zhang. 10 had it 48-47 Zhang. 6 had it 48-47 for Yan Jacek. Nobody scored it any further. And then I look at Zhang Weili her last time out, and it was either 48-47 for Rose or for Zhang Weili. Like, it was a really close fight. But again, I thought Zhang won the first two rounds. Rose won the next two. Fifth one, again, was a bit of a kicker. You can make an argument. But Zhang Weili, again, training at Fight Ready with Cejudo and his pillows, she was able to gain that wrestling edge. She's training with Deiveson Figueiredo. You're going to get better at some of those positions. Do I expect her to do it against Joanna? Possibly. But I look at, again, Bang Tao. The Hickman brothers are great at really rounding out a skill set and adding that extra edge. You saw it when they were training with the Volkanovskis or the Adesanyas of the world. There's so many people that like to train with those guys, whether it's in New Zealand, whether it's in the States, like traveling circus, so to speak, for those two brothers in high demand. But now that they have their own gym in Thailand at Bang Tao, they're bringing in big talent. There's somebody else that's finishing off their camp there, just getting acclimatized. Yuri Prochazka's also there now, who is at Fight Ready as well. So interesting there. But I do like that for Zhang Weili. For Joanna, I do expect a very good competitive fight out of her. At 34, you sit there, you wonder. She hasn't had a fight since that last one against Zhang Weili. That fight 2 years, 2 months ago. Joanna's last win against Michelle Waterson.
She beat the brakes off.
2 years and 7 months ago, she has lost to Valentina that didn't make a lot of sense at 125, but was somewhat competitive.
She looked good. Again, yeah. Everybody gets mad at me every time I say this, but like, Joanna up until... I'm trying to think. Who was the last part? Like, Andrasch had a little bit of success in the first couple of minutes, but Valentina beat the brakes off her, too. Like, Joanna, really, her and Jennifer Maya are the only two people to, like, win a round off Valentina. So, the fact that Jacek was so undersized in that matchup, but was still able to have some success, I do think is a huge feather in her cap.
Matt, the odds have this, Zhang Weili opened at minus 150, minus 175 right now. Joanna, your friend at Buffalo Wild Wings, Jedder Zetterchek, open to plus 130. She's now plus 145. Matt, for Jedder Zetterchek, I think she has a better opportunity than that. So we're going to have a look at the topology vote. Surprise to us there to you. I'm going to say over under 67.5% Zhang Weili.
Say under.
I'm going to say under. Slightly under. So 897 total votes. 62% Zhang. 82% by decision. For the 38% that have Joanna Ye and Jacek, 84% by decision. I think Zhang Weili wins this fight. I think she mixes in her wrestling in this one. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. But I think she has an edge in most categories in this one. At this point in 2022.
If Robbie Lawler and Nick Diaz can be a 5-round main card pay-per-view fight, this sure as heck should have been.
Papa, what are we doing here?
That's not, like, this fight more than any fight in UFC history should be a, hey, let's just make it 5 rounds. Like, their first fight is one of the greatest fights of all time. Regardless of gender, weight class, titles, I don't care. It is one of the all-time great fights between two humans. Again, it was very close. It wasn't a robbery, no matter who you had it for, but it was very competitive. I do worry about Jan Jacek's ability to take damage at this stage of her career, though. She took 2.5 years off, basically, for a reason. She is trying to look for the proper matchups to get her back to a title shot, and she isn't interested in fighting the 10th-ranked fighter and working her way back up to the top. And I do think her priorities are a little bit different at this stage of her career, and that's why I do like Wei Li in this matchup. I do think it's going to be a phenomenal fight, just because stylistically, these two fighters are sort of action fighters, like you had said at the early part of this video. This is going to be better than Carlos Esparza versus Rose Namajunas. Eunice too. I can almost guarantee you that. So I do like Wei Li, but this could be a great fight.
The first fight was in the pantheon of greatness with Bigfoot Silva, Mark Hunt. And if you don't believe me, go back and watch their first fight. It was wild. The second one wasn't as good. But this one should be, well, maybe like that. Maybe it won't be as good as the first, but I am hoping it will be. Both of us going with a former champion, Magnum Zhang Wei Li, to get the win, and going from Magnum to Bullet Valentina Shevchenko in the co-main event, taking on Tyler Santos in the main event. Glover Teixeira against BJP Yuri Prochazka.
This is what I will say, though, and I'm almost arguing against my own point. Hear me out.
Don't do it.
Joanna Jacek, when she saw Carlos Esparza win the title, probably got a pretty big boost in confidence. She's coming off 2 losses to Rose Namajunas. If she gets this win, you're probably not going to get the third fight against Rose, just because you've already lost to her twice. Now there is a window for Joanna to eventually get a title shot if she is able to win this weekend. So maybe that is the extra motivation that she needed to be like, okay, if I beat Wei Li, if I look really good this weekend, I can become champion again. I could become Joanna champion. So I will say that. She was a great champion at one point, so maybe that is the extra motivation she needed, but I still like Wei Li.
Both of us going with Zhang Wei Li. Keep locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Big time title fight coming up this weekend. Co-main event of UFC 275. We have Valentina Shevchenko looking to defend the belt once more, taking on Brazil's Tyler Santos. And if you told me about 3 years ago, Tyler Santos is going to challenge for a UFC title, I would have called you a liar and a dirty, dirty one at that. But Tyler Santos has proven me wrong, and she has gone on like a wrecking ball since she lost to Mauro Romero Barella by split decision. I mean, she took on Molly McCann. I told Fight Night Picks fans, lock of the night. I used that L word. I said, lock of the night. Molly McCann against Tyler Santos. She can put it in the bank. And guess what happened? Tyler Santos ran through Molly McCann like she was running
the hot knife through butter.
It was so easy. Then she took on Jillian Robertson and beat her at her own game. Then she took on Roxanne Modafferi and knocked her down and beat her. Then she took on Joanne Wood and went, hey, I'm going to get close to you and knock you down twice close to the clinch. I'm going to take you down. I'm going to do whatever I want. And for Tyler Santos, that win over Joanne Wood, who's become a poster of title shots, was the win that she needed to get that opportunity. Santos right now is ranked 4th in this division. But Matt, I talked about this when we opened the show. If you're not watching the full card offering, you should. But if you are, I said Tyler Santos is beating these women at their own game. When she beat Jillian Robertson, she took her down. She controlled her. She did everything she needed to. She beat Joanne Wood with the striking, knocked her down, got in close. Like, Tyler Santos is beating these women in ways that, well, just contenders and prospects don't. And I really like that out of somebody. And she's getting the respect out of the odds makers too, which might sound silly because she's more than a plus 400 underdog. But hear me out. Tyler Santos is one of these better contenders that we've seen in a long time.
And nowadays, it's almost like Mike Tyson when he was in his prime. Like you said, being a plus 450 underdog is kind of showing Tyler Santos quite a bit of respect, because the majority of Valentina's opponents are in the, you know, plus 7, 800 type categories. We're talking about all-time upsets if she is able to lose. But against Tyler Santos, there are a few areas where Santos can have success in this fight. And the weird thing about Valentina is that, like, again, not to give my prediction away too early, Valentina is probably going to win this fight, if we're all being very honest. Like, she is pound for pound probably the number one fighter in the world when it comes to her weight class, because she is that much better than everyone she's been in there with for such a long time. But eventually, that's a huge negative. Like, when you're fighting people who are on your level or a little bit better than you, and they're really pushing you, and every day you're trying to get a little bit better, a little bit better, and a little bit better, you are going to make improvements over time. It's kind of like Jake Paul's boxing career. Like, a lot of people want to hate on him because, oh, he's just like an internet star. But, like, just think about it. He has a lot of money. He has a lot of spare time, probably. And he does box. Like, he does train. And if you train boxing every day, you do that for a couple of years, you're going to get better at it. But with Valentina, she's been so much better than all of her opponents for so long now. Is she really getting better every single time we see her in the cage, or is this just the same fighter time after time after time who's just been able to rest on her laurels because she is so much better than her opponents? I do think Santos is the type of fighter who's going to make us reevaluate Shevchenko moving forward, because Santos could have success physically. She's very big for this weight class. I don't think Shevchenko is going to be able to just bully her around in the clinch like she has been able to past opponents, because Jessica Andrade on the inside would have a little bit of success, but Valentina, almost like a really good boxer, would either be all the way out so you can't hit me, or all the way inside to where you can't get extension on your punches. And Valentina is very physically strong in those clinches. It is reminiscent. Remember when she beat Holly Holm? Yeah, she beat Holly Holm. It was a while ago, but Valentina beat the brakes off Holly Holm at 135, and she did that a lot with her body-to-body takedowns, and that tells me how strong Valentina has to be to take down basically a featherweight at bantamweight when Valentina herself belongs at the 125-pound division. It's just Vitaly Santos, I think she can have some success in the striking, and we haven't said that in a long time when a fighter's fighting Valentina.
Valentina Shevchenko, 34 years old. You look at the time when Valentina debuted in pro MMA, it was about the same time that 42-year-old Glover Teixeira debuted in pro MMA. Like, that's how wild it is. Shevchenko's kickboxing career is highly noted, and it should be. And her unorthodox methods of training all over the world at small gyms are on full display coming up for this fight, because she's got a camp with, like, Josiane Nunes, Antonina, and Pavel. And
does Valentina have the best background pictures for her camps of all time? It's always like she's in this, like, scenic town in Maine. She'll have a mountain range in the background.
Yeah, she trained in Brunswick, Maine in a hole-in-the-wall gym for a fight against Joanna in Toronto. Like,
it's interesting stuff.
But she trained in Florida for this fight, and I know, like, I might have it as Evolve MMA. I threw it up there. One Championship's probably all over that. Like, they love it when there's a fighter that's actually out of Canada, but they can somehow build them out of Singapore, or they can build them out of Southeast Asia. But for Valentina, she's at Evolve, rounding out the last piece of her game in Singapore. But again, another fighter that's on this card, Jocelyn Edwards, in that training camp. But again, it's weird coming into this fight, and I know a lot of people are going to say it. Is this the fight, just like Amanda Nunes, Juliana Pena, where somebody upsets the apple cart and gets that win? The question surrounding Valentina, and I watched her on the MMA Hour with Ariel, it was kind of like, well, you've kind of done everything. Like, you know, you're starting to get later into your career. Are you thinking about a family? Well, kind of, but not really. Like, you know, I still have a little bit more to fight and so on and so forth. It's just kind of getting a little murky and a little weird because Valentina's beaten so many people. And it's like, do you have a third fight against Amanda Nunes? Well, even Amanda Nunes is at a weird spot at 135. She's not really the champ, and she's over watching Bobby Maximus get beat on The Ultimate Fighter, like, in the worst season that you've never heard of, because nobody's paying attention to that show. But when I do look at this fight, Matt, Tyler Santos, when she's walking fighters down, has a ton of success. When she's working her takedowns, has a ton of success. The only fight that I can go back to in the UFC and go, well, geez, Tyler Santos didn't really have a ton of success, is the Mauro Marabrella fight years ago. So I have a hard time looking at this fight going, Shevchenko's a minus 600 favorite, better kicker, in and out. Like, there's definitely things that Shevchenko's great at compared to Santos, but this is a weird crossroads fight.
This thing with Santos, though, and I think this is going to be the whole story of the fight. Santos is very good. She has slow feet, though, and I do think that's going to tell the whole story of this fight. She's someone who will plot forward, and she doesn't bounce on her feet very much. And I really do think footwork is one of the most important things you have to focus on when you're fighting someone like Valentina Shevchenko. There is not a stat for bounces per minute in MMA, but Valentina Shevchenko has some of the fastest feet in MMA, just regardless of organization. She's very quick on the in and out, and that's why someone like Caitlin Chookagian could have a little bit of success on the feet against her, because they're both footwork-based fighters. I really do expect Tyler Santos to enter on a straight line in a lot of instances throughout this fight, and I do think Shevchenko can make her pay for that predictable attack. If Santos did have faster feet, if she could move from left to right a little bit quicker, maybe she could switch up her attack enough to surprise Valentina, maybe catch her with a big shot early. But I do think Santos, for as good and as well-rounded as she is slightly predictable, and she does lack some of the intangibles that some of the upper echelon fighters do have, and that's why I still like Valentina. But again, at 34 years of age, being as accomplished as she is, I've been really big into Roy Jones Jr. lately. And for instance, he was a middleweight light heavyweight who passed cruiserweight, went up to heavyweight, just because he kind of ran out of things to do in his own division. Like, at a certain point for Valentina, you would expect her to almost be calling for the Pena fight. Like, that's the type of stuff that gets you into... she's a Hall of Famer already, but you get the idea. Like, legends are told about fighters who go out of their weight classes, try something that's never been tried before. And if Shevchenko could become the first flyweight, bantamweight champ of all time, like, that's a historic accomplishment that we talk about forever. So, at some point, I do expect Shevchenko to test herself more than just the 125-pound division, but I still like her in this fight.
Legends are made of Shevchenko dancing on the graves of, you know, her opponents and also Reddit memes are as well. You look at the odds for this one, Shevchenko open to minus 600, minus 686 over on Best Fight Odds right now. Santos open plus 400, plus 468. I like the value on Santos. We have a look at the total vote on Tapology. Surprise to us, it is to you. I'm going to say over under 85% to Shevchenko.
Over.
Over 94%, 972 total votes, 38% by knockout, 48% by decision for the 6% with Santos, 60% by decision, 22% by knockout. Tyler Santos, former Aspera FC champion, all three round fights. So this one's a five rounder, so that's going to be interesting because her style doesn't lend credence to a five round fight. Shevchenko's does. I have Shevchenko ever so slightly in this fight, and I've never said that in Shevchenko's entire career. I've always gone with Shevchenko. I've been like head over heels with Shevchenko in her UFC tenure. I think Santos has a very real shot at beating Shevchenko this weekend with her wrestling, with her striking, with her power in the clinch. I will have Shevchenko. Again, I agree with you with the movement on the feet, but like it's ever so slightly.
Not ever so slightly. If the level of entry to beat Valentina Shevchenko was look good against Joanne Wood, a lot more people would have competitive fights against Valentina Shevchenko. Tyler Santos is coming up beating Roxanne Modafferi at the end of her career and Joanne Wood at the end of her career. I really don't think Tyler Santos has fought anybody who even offers a slightly similar look to Valentina Shevchenko, whereas Shevchenko's fought the likes of Joanna Jędrzejczyk, even though she's a little bit smaller, Jessica Andrade, Caitlin Chookagian, people who have been number one contenders, not for just one fight, 4 years in their respective divisions. So I do like Shevchenko quite a bit in this fight.
Both of us going with Kyrgyzstan's own Valentina Shevchenko to get the win. Make your own approximations on this fight as you will. Let us know down below in the comment section who you have. If a minus 680 fighter is your flavor, it's definitely not ours, but let us know. And we have a big time main event coming up at light heavyweight between Yuri Prochazka, who's a favorite, challenging against the 42-year-old champ Glover Teixeira, who's reached the pinnacle of his division. I love it. I can't wait for it. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks. We always say, let's get into it. Main event, UFC 275, as always, one half your host into Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram, at Craig Allen FNP. With me to my left, to your right, respective socials, at Matt Allen FNP. I'm amped up. We have Glover Teixeira taking on Yuri Prochazka for the promotion's light heavyweight belt. And if you asked me 5 years ago if this fight would happen, I would say no. John Jones is going to be the champion till the end of time. But we're here, and I'm excited for it, because for Glover Teixeira, he's on a tidy little win streak. His boxing is what got him to the dance, and the UFC's promoting it as such, but it's his groundwork that's really gotten things done. And we're on the right side of the history as Fight Night Picks, because we thought that Glover Teixeira would beat Thiago Santos, but I never thought he'd beat Jan Blachowicz, and he made it look very easy. Second round submission finish there for Yuri Prochazka, a win streak that spans 12 straight fights that's been going on since 2016, getting it done over with Ryzen in the UFC, finish wins over Volkan Oezdemir, former title challenger at UFC 220, and a big time win over a guy who had a sniff at the belt, maybe won it, Dominic Reyes. But Matt, I mean, Yuri Prochazka's come in and just kind of lit the world on fire. He is the favorite this weekend, taking on Glover Teixeira. And listen, I let the people, I threw it out there, YouTube community tab, Instagram, vote for that thumbnail. They wanted Teixeira, they wanted Prochazka all alone on their own. And I kind of did a sneaky little thing with that thumbnail, and I put them in close proximity. Yuri Prochazka against Teixeira, if it gets into close boxing range, Glover Teixeira is just like Marge Simpson with those uppercuts in close proximity. You don't want to be there. And that's what I did out there in that thumbnail for the people.
What I really like about Glover Teixeira is that he doesn't lead with his chin. A lot of strikers will lead with their chin and then throw. Glover Teixeira is very... just intelligent with his own striking defense. Now, the problem is, he does duck a lot. Rumble Johnson was able to capitalize on that. He knocked him out with a beautifully placed uppercut in, what, 13 seconds, I believe. Alexander Gustafsson was also able to hurt him with the uppercut multiple times. But I would say Rumble Johnson and Gustafsson are two of the higher level strikers, especially with their own boxing on the inside, in this division's history, if we're being honest. And that's why a guy like Glover can struggle with types of fighters like that. Yuri is a very good striker, but he's not cut from the same cloth of those two previous strikers. He will throw kicks, he will throw wider hooks, he will throw spinning elbows like we saw in the Dominic Reyes fight. But this is something that has to be said about Yuri Prohoshka and his UFC run. It's been very Justin Gaethje-esque. It's been very bright, very popular. It's been star-studded. They've all been like high-profile fights, either on the main card of a pay-per-view or a main event itself as last time out. He got hurt bad by Dominic Reyes. That's what I mean. Like, he got upkicked by Dominic Reyes and almost died. Like, he got completely flatlined, just fell on top of him, and then knocked him out. And then against Volkan was having success with his boxing early on in that fight. And Yuri's someone who will try to game the system, like Craig's doing right now. Like,
hands down, head out, eats a shot, and then kind of stands there.
Lennox Lewis got knocked out by Haseem Rockman, and it was the exact same thing. Lennox Lewis was like moving backwards and he smiled. He was like, haha, you're not going to knock me out. And Rockman knocked him out with a huge right hand.
Anderson Silva, Chris Weidman too.
Exactly. Like, cockiness will get you caught at a certain point. Yeah, it's cool to shoot like Steph Curry and turn around before it goes in. But Nick Young also did that. And now it's a pretty famous gif where he shot, turned around, and did not go in. Yuri, I do think, has a lot of confidence in his own durability because he can take a really big shot and keep on throwing his own power shots, and a lot of the times it helps him. If you go back and watch a lot of his fights, it's opponent cracks him with a big shot, gets excited, and then he absolutely demolishes them with a huge shot of his own. It just, he balances that line very finely. Like, it's, he's like Chris Davis in 2013 in MMA. Like, yes, he might set the league record for home runs, but he's also probably going to set the record for strikeouts too. And that's why I do think when it goes badly for Prohoshka, it's going to look awful. It's going to be one of those Adolfo Vieira black belt killers get submitted himself, because Prohoshka does have some suspect losses throughout his career. He lost to Carl Albrechtsen.
He has three losses!
I know, but the guys that we lost to were able to take advantage of a similar aspect of his game. Yuri is a phenomenal striker, but if you do make him work at a very high level, you can take him down as the fight goes on. And for Glover, we've seen him do it time and time again. He can eat barrages of punches and make the fight difficult no matter what. Where most fighters panic wrestle, it's almost like Glover to share his plan. Like, the fight doesn't get started until Glover ends up on his back and then goes for his own takedown. That's when the fight really does begin. And even at 42 years of age, I might favor Glover's longevity in this fight. He has not given me a reason to think he's going to fade as this fight goes on. Against Anthony Smith, starts out poorly, builds as the fight goes on. He did the exact same thing against Thiago Santos. So I think early on in this fight, Prohoshka's the much faster guy, is the much more athletic guy. But if this fight does make it to round three, let's say, I think this could go into like fight of the year type stuff.
Prohoshka used to fight 10 minute one rounds.
I'm well aware the rules were different.
So again, for Yuri Prohoshka's last loss back in 2015, 16, let's make sure we get that one correct. He was taking on King Mose the end of 2015. It was New Year's Eve. He had beat Vadim Nemkov. He had beat Satoshi Ishii not long before that, a couple of days before. Tournament championship, King Mo, and he loses in that fight. And again, King Mo, former Strikeforce light heavyweight champ.
King Mo got beat by Crow Cop in that tournament.
You're making... King Mo didn't get beat by Crow Cop.
I'm almost certain King Mo won that tournament.
King Mo won, but if you do look
he
at it...
He was older in his career.
If you do look at it, I mean, lost to Carl Albrechtsen, lost to King Mo. Wins for Yuri Prohoshka. He has a knockout win very quickly over Bruno Capiloza. You know, PFL's champion at heavyweight last year, and he's going to buzzsaw through the competition. He already has in his one win in 2022, but... Those are just some of the guys. I mean, again, he was able to beat King Mo after that. He was able to beat who else? Like, just pick some of the names off his record. He's won 12.
CB Dolloway won. Like, that's the thing about Yuri. Before he came to the UFC, a lot of his wins were over aging UFC vets who were just kind of fed to him. And that's why it was hard to get a good tell as to how good he was going to be. Because, like, Brandon Halsey didn't belong in the cage with him. Neither did CB Dolloway. Neither did Fabio Maldonado. Even Muhammad Lawala, King Mo in 2019, was so far past his prime by the time he fought Yuri that it was hard to get a good gauge to how good he was going to be, because that like 5-fight run that he went on before he did come over was against guys who you fully expected him to be able to knock out early on in most of those fights.
Yeah, and it was CB Dolloway, Fabio Maldonado, King Mo, Brandon Halsey, and the Honey Bear, Jake Hewn, my guy. But good wins for Prochazka, but again, you're winning in ways that people would expect you to win. So if we do parlay that forward, ground game, Prochazka famously went to Fight Ready as a part of this camp. It's a long camp for these two guys. We've been talking about this fight for months and months at this point, but Prochazka went to Fight Ready, trained with Cejudo in the pillows, trained with John Jones. Yes, John Jones at Fight Ready. And then rounded it out the last couple of weeks, getting acclimatized in Thailand at Bang Tao Muay Thai with the Hickman brothers before going over to Singapore to take this fight against Teixeira. For Teixeira, training at home, Teixeira MMA and Fitness. He was a landscaper at one point. Now he's an MMA gym owner.
Like, that video that Brian Campbell and Luke Thomas did where they sat down with Glover was awesome. Where he's like, yeah, maybe I didn't come to America all that legally the first time. And it caused some issues. But just his whole journey to, like, where he is. And now he has a whole stable of fighters in Connecticut. Like, Glover Teixeira is one of the best success stories from MMA there is. Like, he had a hard career. He never got the noticeability. He never got the recognition that he deserved until later on in his career, went on this massive run. And now he's finally UFC champion. Like, you cannot tell the story of this division without talking about Glover Teixeira now. So, like, win, lose, or draw, Glover Teixeira is never going to be a loser in this whole game.
Not doing it for the money, just doing it for the legacy. And yeah. I look at this one, it's kind of weird because Felice Herrig, Karolina Kovalkiewicz last week. It was a really tough one. Kovalkiewicz on 5 losses, Herrig on 3 on the way in. And I didn't see the quotables from Felice Herrig where she was like, I don't need the money anymore. I don't need to fight. And if the UFC cuts me, it is what it is. And then she went, I'm retiring. And it was sad at the end. And of course it is. But I haven't heard that out of Glover Teixeira yet, but if I do, boy, I don't like that. But for Teixeira, again, one of the toughest, most durable guys. You look at that 13-second knockout loss to Rumble Johnson. His last 3 losses, Rumble Johnson, Gustafsson in the 5th round, and a decision loss to Beeston 25-8, who's going to be a Bellator champ one day. We have a look at the odds for this fight. Teixeira opened a plus 108, plus 166. Yuri Prochazka opened a minus 130. He is a minus 202 favorite. For a guy whose nickname has switched from Denisa to BJP, he is favored to win this fight, Matt. The over-under on Tapology, it's a surprise to us, it is to you, but that doesn't matter because this is a big-time fight. We're going to throw it on over to our YouTube community tab. We want to hear from you. 768 total votes, 63% Prochazka. Cowboys SB saying Glover's going to get his effing block knocked off. LOL, he was set up for Jan Yuri, but accidentally tripped into a sub and stole the belt. So Cowboys not a fan of Glover Teixeira. We've got Yuri's wrestling isn't the best, but training at Fight Ready can definitely help that. I'll stick to Glover, but it's definitely 50-50. Safe to say it doesn't go the distance. Gerald Lynch saying Prochazka is hungry in every sense of the word, whereas Teixeira is fighting for legacy. Youthful hunger will win out. Bo is saying either Yuri KOs Glover or Glover weathers a storm and subs Yuri. And Matt, I'll give one more person the opportunity. D.D. Lynch saying if Glover can take him down, it's only a matter of time. So Matt, the fans split on this. A lot of comments and thank you over there in the YouTube community tab. But the fans going with Yuri Prochazka. What are we saying here?
Experience in MMA is one of the most important just skills a fighter can have, and we see this all the time. Someone like Charles Oliveira, who has a lot of skill, just it took him time to really refine his skill and figure out what he is and isn't good at. Glover's another example of this. Like, his top control, his pressure, his ground opinion, his submission ability is basically perfected at this point. Like, if you get underneath Glover Teixeira, the fight is probably going to be over at a certain point because he's that effective. He makes you pay for every second you spend under him. The other side of the Glover Teixeira story is, though, you're going to be able to hit him once, twice, maybe 3-4 clean times before he will be able to get that takedown. And at 39, he can eat those shots. At 40, he can eat those shots. But we have seen Glover get rocked and get hurt before in his career where he wasn't able to take advantage of it. In the Corey Anderson fight, he looked pretty old. He was slow. He was behind a lot. He was just not really able to close the distance. And Corey Anderson was able to use his movement and just get away from Glover Teixeira. I think Yuri's going to be able to do the exact same thing early on in this fight. And I will say this. In the 3rd round, 4th round, 5th round, Glover's probably going to win all those rounds. If we get there, exactly. But if this makes the 3rd round, like, I can't do this, of course. My pick is officially switched to Glover Teixeira. I just don't think it's going to get there. I do think Yuri's going to be able to finish it in the early 10 minutes because Glover is there to be hit. He does have good left-to-right movement, but it is somewhat predictable. And a striker of Yuri Prochazka's caliber should be able to set him up for a big shot. But Yuri's been hit before, and it makes me nervous as all hell, because if he does get rocked by Glover and then immediately taken down, Glover's gonna beat his head into the ground, probably take a few teeth with it and choke him out. So I think if it goes bad for Yuri, it's gonna go terribly, but I still have him in this fight.
Fight doesn't go the distance is minus 450, which tells you all you need to know about this one. I do like Yuri Prochazka because, again, he's fast for a light heavyweight, and he's big for a light heavyweight too. You can see it there. He's an inch taller. He's got 4 inches of reach. He doesn't really use his height and his length to his advantage at all points. He will crash the distance, and he is susceptible to getting boxed up. And Glover Teixeira, again, from the thumbnail, is a guy that in tight Marge Simpson's guy.
I always think about the Rashad Evans knockout that he had. He immediately went chest to chest with him, threw the craziest left hook you've ever seen, and immediately flatlined Evans against the cage.
So a great opportunity for Glover in this fight. But again, for Yuri, he's one of those guys that will get a little happy when he rocks guys, but I think in this matchup, he is the faster guy. He does have that power in his hands, and I think Yuri Prochazka will become a UFC champion, which is crazy because, Matt, a couple years ago, we made a video, light heavyweight tournament video, where we went Yuri Prochazka all the way through a tournament because we threw everybody. He wasn't even in the UFC at that point, and John Jones, those two guys were in the thumbnail. And I had Yuri Prochazka winning the whole way through because John Jones had a harder strength of schedule in his side of the bracket. But Matt, I think it's going to be an amazing fight. Both of us going with Chechia's own. That's going to throw people for a loop because they're going to go Czech Republic's own Yuri Prochazka to get the win. We have some big time fights on this card, and it should be noted, I'm away all week, so no question mark kicks, but we'll get creative with our final picks after weigh-ins. We'll throw those out there on our socials. So make sure you're checking it out at Fight Night Picks, at Craig Allen FNP, at Matt Allen FNP. No sidekick for this card. Hopefully you guys enjoy the fights coming up this week. And Matt, we can look forward to some cards coming up. Armin Tsarukyan's taking on Mateusz Gamrot at the end of June.
What a fight.
There's a lot of big fights coming up that I know I'm excited about, and you are too.
We're getting a rematch of one of the greatest fights of all time this weekend. How could you not be excited? For Glover and Yuri. Yuri, if he is able to win this fight, could go down as one of the next all-time greats. He has that kind of eye-catching talent. And it's always nice when the best is also one of the flashiest. It just makes life all that much better. Like, when Max Holloway was the UFC champion, it's pretty cool. It was like, hey, not only is one of the best fighters the champion of his division, the most exciting fighter is the champion of his division. And if Yuri is able to capture the title, he will probably do the exact same thing. So it is an extremely exciting pay-per-view coming up this weekend.
Great card coming up. Make sure you look out for those socials. Keep it locked in with Fight Night Picks, we always say.
Let's get into it.